joint workshop of the committees for finance standing and select committee on finance in the NCP, as well as the standing and select committee on appropriations. We are also fortunate still to have the chief whip, the newly elected chief whip of the NCP, with us as a committee member. So welcome also to the chief whip, Honorable Mohai. I saw Dr. Matema. Where is she? There she is. Welcome. You're back in finance. Many years ago, she served in APAC. Yeah, we were we were in that structure as well, part of our life. Also to the PBO, the Advocate Jenkins and his team, and the staff component. Apologies, there's one apology, that's for the Honorable Karim, he's out of the country. And the second one is for Comrade Pinky. Her mother fell and she had to attend to her, to take her to hospital, etc. Are there any other apologies, Alan? Not from you. Esther, Estelle, Lubabalo, apologies.
No apologies.
Nothing from the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Are there apologies? My God. Oh, yeah. Very important. Very important, honorable members. Comrade Pule Mabi lost his brother. We got the message over the weekend. And he's attending to that. It's a various... It's something like that happens in your life. Someone is torn away from your family. And they will be as a family in our prayers. I sent him a message. But he also completed his exams for the MBL, so we hope it went very well there to add value to the committee. Thank you for sensitizing us, Honorable Hanako. I'm going to hand over to our co-chair for today, Honorable Posa, to do the introduction. You're welcome.
Honorable members, let me take this opportunity and welcome all of you to this very important joint workshop of the Finance and Appropriations Committees on the Review of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, Act No. 9 of 2009. As honorable members are aware, the ability of Parliament to continuously improve on the manner in which it participates and engages in the national budget process and facilitates public interaction therein is and remains an area of continuous improvement and an important feature of the work of Parliament as a representative of the people. In short, the Act gives effect to the mandate in Section 77, Subsection 3 of the Constitution that an Act of Parliament must provide for a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament. The procedure hinges on the constitutional obligation of Parliament to maintain oversight over the exercise of national executive authority. But also, in response to the gaps that were identified in the Act. Indeed, we had to converge here so that we can look at how do we close those gaps and strengthen the Money Bills Act so that we can do our work effectively and efficiently. So I'm going to invite members to indeed listen carefully to the presentations that will be given to us and have a robust and fruitful engagement as we work towards ensuring a budget process that is effective, transparent, robust, and engaging, and in all facets represents the will of our people. Thank you. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Pausa. Honourable members, you must have the following documents in front of you. It's a colourful one, the review of the Act, discussion paper, as well as a tracking, a paper with the tracking on the right-hand side. That's the three documents that you must have with you, and as well the act as it stands as now. Here it is. That's the tools we're going to use in the workshop. We're going to take the first presentation, that's by Advocate Jenkins, an update and progress. The Select Committee for Finance and Appropriations attended, if I am correct, the meeting in February. The meetings after that we couldn't attend because of the NCP program, as well as the processing of the Division of Revenue Bill, where we went to provinces. So that's why we were not in attendance at the previous joint meeting. That's the reason. There's no other reason. So this workshop is also to update us on the current status. So after that, the PBO, Professor Jahed, will give his briefing, the PBO's briefing. Advocate Jenkins, over to you.
Thank you, Co-Chair.
Before we go further, the Secretariat must please be vigilant today, especially when we come to the discussion and inputs are made by honourable members. Please note it carefully. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable chairpersons. Good morning, honourable members and colleagues and members from the public, I suppose. Chair, we're trying to get the overhead projector going, but I see we have a hard copy of the PowerPoint presentation. My idea is to work off the PowerPoint presentation, and I think that's the easiest. And the details can be found in the draft bill.
And the committee assistant, while you go
switch
this machinery.
I call it a draft bill, but all of these are live documents. They continuously get updated as we go through various processes through the Standing Committee on Finance and the joint meeting today. And we're trying to capture the salient points in what's called the discussion paper. Again, it's a document that we try and update regularly just so that we know where we are in the process. So, Chair, I would like to go to the PowerPoint presentation then. I think for the benefit of members, and please feel free to stop me if I'm regurgitating things that's already out there, just the background to this, we know that we've had the Moneyboys Act for a while now. There are certain problems with it. In 2012, the House took a resolution for the Standing Committee on Finance to review the Act with the possibility of introducing amendments. After the 2014 election, there we go, thank you very much. That resolution was revived, as we call it. So we have a standing resolution now in this Parliament for the Standing Committee on Finance to look at this Act, to concur with the other committees, the Select Committee on Finance and the Appropriations Committees, to look at this Act and to make it a bit more practical. So that's the crux of the issue. The priority areas that we as a technical team have identified, as is put out there on the slide, we're dealing with timelines, which are very tight in the Act. I think members are familiar with a lot of the problems there, 16 days for the fiscal framework and a certain time for the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, your appropriation bill to be passed within 4 months of the beginning of the financial year and so forth. The sequencing, you cannot refer the Division of Revenue Bill and the Appropriation Bill prior to finalizing and adopting the fiscal framework. Then the other two bills get referred, which the Appropriations Committee look at. But again, you can't look at the amendments to the Appropriation Bill before you've passed the Division of Revenue Bill. And maybe this is a good time to mention that there's a reason for those sequencing, and that is that you have alignment between your fiscal framework, your division of revenue, and your appropriation bill. You cannot appropriate or divide money that was not evident in the fiscal framework. Fiscal framework being your balance between your expenditure and your income as a whole, as a total. I'm just keeping it very short and easy. And then the third priority area is the budget office, who's here to speak for themselves, firstly, and secondly, as members know, that they are critical in implementation of this Act. They're especially established in terms of Section 15 of the Act to ensure that Parliament gets the support it needs to implement this Act. There are certain consequential matters which unless really necessary, Chair, I'm not really going to go too deep into it. I think where we are at now, the priority areas is let's try and look at it from a conceptual point of view. From the technical team, on our side, what we'd like to get from members is input, even instructions, to say this is what we want to see in the amendment. This is what will help us to do our political work, to do our oversight work in terms of the budget of Parliament. So I think once those things are solidified and we can actually have a draft bill that we can publish in the Government Gazette in terms of the rules and the committee can then adopt and pass through the legislative process, we can talk about the consequential matter. I'm sure I've said it to you in briefing meetings before. Honourable Karim is always very sceptical when officials talk about these matters that we don't have to discuss now. I mean, we're not trying to hide anything. We have the draft, so-called draft bill in front of you. You can look at it, you can ask questions about our so-called consequential or technical amendments, corrections. We can deal with it. Well, some people think that they are, Honourable Hanukkah, some people think that they are actually much more than that. You know, if we change the definition, the implications can be very wide-ranging. But from where we're sitting, we have these priority areas, and these other things, there's a few mistakes in the bill that crept in at the time of drafting. There's a few terminology issues that have changed when we're looking at strategic plans and what do we call our outputs and so forth. So those are the kind of corrections that we're talking about. There's the issue of norms and standards for provincial legislatures, which is a separate issue. Section 123 of the Constitution requires that provinces have their own money bills amendment procedure. At the time when this Act was passed, the Standing Committee on Finance and the Houses at that time said that we must have a binding schedule that will tell provinces how to do their Section 123 obligation. Now, the KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature have raised constitutional concerns with that a few years ago already. And from where I'm sitting, I agree with most of what they're saying. I mean, it's very difficult for Parliament to actually prescribe to a provincial legislature how it must run its committee system and what this committee system, how they must report and so forth, when the Constitution says that these internal matters belong to a provincial legislature. So there's a need to look at those norms and standards and either to make them pure norms and standards or to get rid of the schedule altogether. But to have binding legislative provisions, one must align it with the Constitution, and we have to look at that. And then the way forward. Chair, just the sort of the background. We had the workshop on 8th February. It was a joint workshop. We started with our discussion document then. This is the document we're still working on and recording what we do. Just shortly on the processes, Chair. We were mandated as officials to have a technical team. We were mandated to consult with National Treasury. That meeting has been set up before we try and meet again at the end of this month. On the other hand, there's a need for certain areas from the political or the committee side to deal with it. At the last meeting, Honourable Karim mentioned that we, not us, but politicians start thinking of having a technical, or not a technical, but a political subcommittee to assist the functioning of this process. I think fundamentally because we are short of time and because there's so much to do between the Finance and Appropriations Committee. So that's a proposal, Chair. I think that from the Chair's side needs to be considered whether there should be a subcommittee and how that should be constituted so that we can actually facilitate this process. That little bullet there, Chairs, meeting the presiding officers, that is meant specifically in the light of changes suggested to the functioning of the Parliamentary Budget Office, because those are political decisions that need to be considered and taken. The time frames for this process is planned to consider the MTBPS in terms of the new Amendment Act. It's quite ambitious, but are we allowed to make that joke? The Springboks won this Saturday. I was surprised, but okay. So we can do it. Anything can happen. Any case. We've identified certain priority areas. I've referred to that. We had a meeting with Standing Committee on Finance on the 2nd of May. So this is the next step, 13th of June. The priority areas, I've referred to them, the timelines, the sequencing, and the Parliamentary Budget Office. I'd like to get into the details of that when we get to the timelines. Again, I want to emphasize, Chairperson, that what we are busy with is a live process. I mean, I don't, and I think as a team, we don't have the answers to many of these questions. So therefore, the workshop environment is a good place to have brainstorming and to flesh certain things out. We looked at some of the timeframes. I've tried to put everything there referring to the different sections in the Money Bills Amendment Procedure Act. Timeframes for the adoption of the so-called BRRRs, well, let me not say so-called again, but the BRRRs, Budgetary Review and Recommendation Reports. I don't think there's much problem with those timeframes. When they must be compiled, that we must report to the Houses before the adoption of the report of the NTBPS. I think there's an intention there so that those resolutions on the BRRRs also find its way into how Parliament will report on the NTBPS. So before the adoption of the NTBPS, BRRRs must be adopted. No problem with that. The NTBPS itself, 30 days after tabling of the NTBPS, there must be a report, and then the Minister must, within that time, also have 7 days to respond to that. Now, in the draft bill, we suggest that we change that to refer to a sort of more loose time frame of as soon as possible, or let me just get the correct wording there. It's without delay in terms of the legal definitions, it means as soon as reasonably possible. It's a term that comes from the Constitution, but what we've received back from the meeting we had with the Standing Committee on Finance on the 2nd of May is that we're moving from Antarctica to Arctica, and as we're going from very tight time frames to very loose time frames. And Mr. Karim and the committee then instructed us to find a moderation, something in the middle. And that's what we're working on presently. And there's two options, which are not on the slides or in the pack, that between my colleague, Mr. Prince, and myself, we discussed yesterday. One is to say we leave the time frames as they are. In other words, 30 days after the introduction of the NTBPS, you must report, or as soon as practically thereafter, which just opens up the scope for Parliament to say, well, something happened, let's do it a week later. But it's still not fixed. So that's one option that can be discussed. Another option, which we find in the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, where it refers in, I think it's section 15 or 16, to the strategic plan. It says that Parliament must adopt its strategic plan 5 months after the start of the financial year, or on another date determined by Parliament. So it leaves the scope for Parliament to say we're not going to get our strategic plan adopted specifically this time, simply because the elections were maybe held in May. Let's take a facetious example. So if you must adopt after the start of the financial year, but your elections were only in May, certainly that new Parliament will want to adopt a new strategic plan, or at least amend the one that was adopted before. So you could run out of time in terms of Financial Management Parliament Act, but then it allows the scope for Parliament to take a decision. In other words, some action must be taken by Parliament to set a new date for itself. So these are options that I think one can work with when it comes to these time frames, in light of what the Standing Committee on Finance said on the 2nd of May, to have a moderate view and not to have these loose time frames where it's basically left to the Programming Committee to decide how the budget will be passed. Chair, I want to say at this point, I mean, the time frames we consider the various instruments that make up the budget will also need to be considered in light of Treasury's comments, because it's a sort of a two-way relationship when it comes to passing the budget. So there are issues that need to be discussed, how we're going to deal with the time frames, but that is the proposal at this point in time. As you can see, Chair, some of the things we have changed, open them up, but I think the discussion, if I can just summarize that, is if we do not want to accept that it's just without delay, then I think the committee what we would appreciate is to get some instruction to say we prefer this option, we prefer that option, or at least put the options to us in writing, which you've said now, the one being another date determined by Parliament, or just an open-ended one where we say as soon as practically or practicably after that. That's basically just summarizing what I've just said. The next slide, Chairperson. What we do need to do is actually, I think, to keep with the intention of the original Act, which was to say we have a predictable situation when it comes to passing the budget. We know more or less what we can do. It's very important for the public out there to also know when Parliament is doing what so that they can prepare to input on it. The budget is a very complicated process, the detail in the budget. So it's quite important not to have it just an open-ended, easy process, but to actually follow, to actually set the process properly in legislation. And I think that is what was intended with Section 77.3 of the Constitution, to say you have to have a process set out in legislation. Chair, this slide is trying to deal with the sequencing issue. In my introduction, I referred to how the sequencing is supposed to work. And I see it as, if you want to use that jargon, as a bit of a linear process, sort of structured that much like a computer program will work, or the way when I learned that if this happens, you have to first deal with the fiscal framework before you even touch the others. You can't have a sort of a melting pot in which we consider all of them and then the results that come out, we align them. But yeah, something like that. The circular, it's a bit like a washing machine, yes. What we're proposing there, Chair, to open up space for Parliament to do programming, is to say that we do the alignment of the three instruments, the fiscal framework, the Division of Revenue Bill, and the Appropriation Bill, through their reporting and not through the referral. So we are saying that instruments can be referred all at the same time as they're introduced. Committees can engage with them. They can get briefing from National Treasury. In other words, while the Standing Committee on Finance and Select Committee on Finance is dealing with the fiscal framework, the Appropriation Committee can receive briefings from National Treasury on the Division of Revenue Bill, start with their public hearings on the Division of Revenue Bill, but they cannot report on the Division of Revenue Bill until Parliament has passed the fiscal framework. Not the committee, but Parliament. So once Parliament has passed the fiscal framework, we know what the fiscal framework will look like, we'll know whether it's amended or not. And at that point, there needs to be a alignment with what is happening in the Appropriations Committee in terms of the Division of Revenue Bill considerations. If there is alignment, then of course the committee can report as soon as possible, or when it wants to, after the fiscal framework is passed. And only after the Division of Revenue Bill reports have been adopted by the Houses can we deal then, can the Appropriations Committee deal with the Appropriation Bill report. But it can certainly do all the preparatory work before that. This is the suggestion, just to open up space for Parliament to program better. What has happened in the past, or the questions that came up in the past, was specifically around, will the Appropriations Committee be non-compliant with the Money Bills Act if they have public hearings or if they receive briefing from National Treasury prior to these bills being referred to them formally? And prior to Parliament passing the fiscal framework. There's a question that has crept up continuously. My advice has always been that once the budget is tabled, the bills are in the public domain. Certainly, the committee are not considering these provisions when they're just getting a briefing, but it's a fine line sometimes, because the debates or the discussions at the briefing session or at a public hearing sometimes influences what a committee will consider consideration and starting to formulate positions on these matters. Our office have tried to give advice to facilitate the passing of the budget and not to delay it unnecessarily. And the principle has always been, the substantive issue has always been, that there must be an alignment between the fiscal framework, the Division of Revenue, and the Appropriation Bill. So, Chair, on the sequencing issue, that's our proposal for now, to open up space. I think I'm going a little bit more in detail on this slide, what the sequencing exactly entails. with the referral to sections, if members want to go into that. The same principles in terms of sequencing and timeframes apply, of course, to the adjustments budget that gets introduced with the MTBPS. The timeframes here are quite tight, especially with the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, which is a 76 bill that must go to provinces. The problem that has crept up continuously there is provinces simply do not have enough time to perform public hearings and to have proper meetings to formulate mandates in terms of the Mandates Act and to send that to the National Council of Provinces and to the Select Committee and then to the National Council of Provinces. So it's critical that space is opened up here for that process to play out. So I think when one deals with sequencing and consider the proposal we're making, to think of that, but also with the timeframes. The timeframes is really too short for provinces to do what's required of them. So Chair, when we're dealing with this budget process, I think it would be appropriate also to take this matter to provinces and to see how provinces will want to influence this process. But be that as it may, Chair, the slide is about the sequencing of the adjustments budget, which I think will open up space for both provinces and for the National Assembly to do their job a little bit more effectively if we say that the reporting must be sequenced rather than the referral. Joe, the next slide is something that came up. I'm not sure if the committee wants to proceed with it or not. There was a question last time, I think, from the Democratic Alliance on this matter. And it's a question that came up to say, when Parliament deals with the budget, there's a process. We sort of understand the budget process, understand the sequencing and timeframes. What happens between two budgets? Not with the adjustments budget process, but between budgets if there's an emergency. Let's take the present emergency in Knysna, where we have billions of rands worth of loss because of a fire, and there's a need for government to intervene. Now, that intervention requires money. Almost by definition, you will fall outside your fiscal framework. We're talking a few billion rands of damage here. Government wants to intervene on that matter. Can Parliament do something about that? Parliament is bound by the fiscal framework. Everything that Parliament does to a money bill must comply with the fiscal framework. The National Treasury is not bound by the fiscal framework. National Treasury, there's nothing in law that says they must stick with their fiscal framework. If they want to introduce, if the Minister of Finance wants to introduce a money bill at that point in time, by law there's nothing preventing the Minister to do that. The question that arises on that is, can Parliament amend that money bill that's introduced, considering that it's bound by the fiscal framework? And that's what we're trying to address with the question that was asked, I think, at the meeting of, not the 2nd of May, the 16th of February, that question was asked. Can Parliament do something about that? So we're trying to open up space here. What the issue of this is that there is a sort of provision in the Public Finance Management Act, Section 16 of the Public Finance Management Act, that deals with emergency situations, where the minister can introduce a money bill and deal with certain emergency situations. If Parliament wants to be able to amend those provisions or actually change that money bill, we need to create some kind of legislative authority for it, otherwise it can't. It can only deal with, it can only perform what's given to it in legislation. If one looks at the proposal in section 30 or clause 13 of the sort of the draft bill, one will see that it's really work in progress. It's an idea that we're trying to do. It's an answer we're trying to give to the question that was asked. If it's necessary to proceed it, we can do further work on it, Chair. If the committee feels that that's not a priority area for now, let's leave it. If we need to unpack it further to see whether there's a real need for it, we can do that. We can look into the history, whether Parliament really needed to do something in this matter. And I can deal with it, but as I said, the question was asked. We're trying to respond to it just at that level, and it's work in progress. Chair, then leaving aside the issue of the schedule for provincial legislatures, this will be the final issue I want to give some input on, and my colleagues from the PBO, if I understand it correctly, will take you through the detail of it. highlight some of the issues. The Parliamentary Budget Office was established specifically to assist Parliament with this oversight function on the budget. The idea behind it was to have a dedicated office that can also be monitored by the committees, who will be the priority clients of the Parliamentary Budget Office, so that the services are assured, so that we do not run out of whatever human capital or resources when the budget is introduced in Parliament. It comes out of various resolutions going back to 1994 by the Parliamentary Budget Office, but fundamentally it comes from the fact that in Parliament's Oversight and Accountability Report, oversight over the budget is seen as fundamental to Parliament's constitutional oversight function. So hence we have a dedicated office that's under control or under a reporting obligation towards Parliament, rather than being lost in the wider and the bigger Parliament administration. What the committee at that stage did was to say, here's a Parliamentary Budget Office, it's headed by a director, it has certain functions that we prescribe in law, you get a budget transferred to you from Parliament's budget and you need to report on that. A lot of complications have then came up as we're trying to give effect to this. Number one, in terms of the transfer of the budget, the question arises, but is the Parliamentary Budget Office a public entity or self-standing entity? Does it have legal personality? To make it practical, if someone in the Parliamentary Budget Office decides to take a labour matter to the CCMA, who is cited? Is it the director? Was it the Secretary to Parliament? With the Speaker and Chairperson as the responding party. Who's responsible for the Parliamentary Budget Office? Can you take the Parliamentary Budget Office to court as it is? Is it a juristic person? So these things are not clear in Section 50. So what we are asking, what is asked of us, I should rather say, is to clarify that. And so we've worked on various options here. Fundamentally, it's a political decision. The decision at the time was taken to have a dedicated office that's not just part of the wider Parliament administration. But whether that entity is a independent, self-standing entity, and I'm very careful to use the word independent because the Act refers to it must give independent advice. Through the years, I've been asked plenty of times, how is this an independent entity? The Act doesn't say anything that it's an independent entity as such. It's not the Reserve Bank, in other words. It's a structure that assists Parliament with what Parliament wants to do. In other words, Parliament can request it to do certain work. It's not an entity that can work according to its own structure, ignoring what Parliament wants it to do. I mean, the functions are set out very clearly, but as with any public servant, the Parliamentary Budget Office must be unbiased and independent in giving its advice. It must be objective. It cannot be politically motivated, in other words. So there's that small difference that has crept up time and time again, become quite a political question that's been asked. Be that as it may, Chair, we have certain practical issues with the PBO. Number one, the appointment of the director must be a sort of an agreement between the four committees. Now, it's very difficult for the four committees to get together and agree on something. It's difficult for the four committees to meet, never mind to agree on something. So a proposal that is coming out is to say already we have a sort of structure that acts as a board that assists the PBO with some of its strategic decisions. That's the chairpersons of the four committees. So should that be formalized in legislation? Should there be a formal board with certain functions? And one can probably write quite a number of provisions there, which is not in our proposal as well. What is the functions of the board and how should it be operating? Who should constitute it? When the PBO starts performing its functions, the Act is clear who's in charge of the human resources, that's the director. When it comes to the budget, the Act is quiet or silent on the specific fiduciary responsibilities of the director and what the director should do and what the director is responsible for. So that, and I don't know if it has been, Professor Jai, a problem for the auditors, but against what standards do you audit the PBO? So, Chair, there's various options that one can consider. I've mentioned to you that Parliament is in the last area of passing the Financial Sector Regulation Bill, where certain entities are established inside and outside government structures. I mean, if I may mention it, there's the Prudential Authority. That's a structure that's not a public entity, but it's a self-standing structure with certain functions and an accounting officer within the Reserve Bank. It's called the Prudential Authority. You also get your Market Conduct Authority there, which is a juristic person, much like the Prudential Authority, but it's a public entity. In other words, it reports completely separately in terms of the PFMA. So there you have two options already. And do you establish the PEO, or do you clarify the role of the PBO as a juristic person but not a public entity attached to Parliament? Or do you establish a self-standing public entity with all its own resources, all its own functions, its HR issues, its own financial systems, and so forth? See, these things need to be clarified in the Act, because at the moment that is not very clear, and it's creating confusion, and most importantly, it prevents compliance with the Moneyball's Amendment Procedure Act. So I think what we're trying to ensure here is to have a practical solution, on the one hand, which will allow compliance with the Moneyball's Act. On the other hand, we need to consider that in light of the reason, the purpose for which the PBO was established in terms of Section 50. There was a deliberate decision taken at that time not to say the Secretary of Parliament should establish a Parliamentary Budget Office within the administration of Parliament. If in 2009 the Houses wanted that, they would have said it. That's what the courts usually say. If you wanted it, you would have written it in legislation. What the committee at that stage wanted, and what it reported to the Houses, and what the Houses accepted, was to have a identifiable structure with systems and with functions that will give effect to this Act and assist Parliament to do its oversight work. So keeping that in mind, wanting to take that forward, how can we cast that idea or that purpose into a format that we exactly know where this budget office is, who's responsible for the functions, who does it report to? Dealing with all the issues that have come up in the past, I don't know, Chair, if I need to say more, I will, but I'm going to leave it to my colleagues in the PBO if they want to input further on that. I'm trying to highlight certain things or certain critical areas in the Section 15 area, but in general, what this slide is trying to do is to say we have, since it's a bit of a misnomer, Chair, and I'll be honest with you on this one, we say that the Financial Management of Parliament Act was passed after the Moneyball's Amendment Procedure Act, but it was a few days after. Okay, so what has happened is that when the Financial Management of Parliament Act was passed, which sets out in detail how Parliament's financial management must take place, those issues were not really taken into account at all when we passed the Moneyball's Amendment Procedure Act, although it was the same committee was dealing with both pieces of legislation. So this slide is trying to say there should be a better alignment between the two. There should be basically Treasury norms and standards for the Parliamentary Budget Office. And again, there's various ways of doing it. One could be that we write it into Section 15, much like the Financial Sector Regulation Bill did with the Prudential Authority, to say these are the fiduciary responsibilities. A small example, the director must ensure that there are systems in place for financial management. And if I can just use a very simple example, that's not in the bill at the moment. It just says the director is accountable. It doesn't say for what. Just for the financial management, but what must the director do to be accountable? Director can only do what legislation allows him or her to do in terms of the principle of legality. But the director cannot decide without getting a discretion in legislation how to do the financial management. So that needs to be sorted out. And that would be another way would just to be to say that the budget office must follow the same rules and regulations that set out in the Financial Management of Parliament Act. That has certain implications because it makes the whole exercise also subject to the oversight mechanisms and stuff in the Financial Management of Parliament Act, but it's an option. It's not a problem, but it just needs to be done, Chair, because it's a constitutional requirement that we have this clarified in law. Chair, I think from my side, there was an issue that came up on the 2nd of May. It's the last bullet. There, I think there was an issue of the resources of the PBO. At the moment, the PBO advised the four committees, the two appropriations and two finance committees. And then section 15 says that if a member or a committee needs advice, it can also request it from the PBO. And the PBO is then subject to resource constraints, cannot give that advice. At the meeting on the 2nd of May, what came out was that certain members thought, and the committee agreed, that there should be an avenue where members and other committees can request the PBO to do work for them, but it should go through a committee. So I'm not sure what, when I looked at it and started preparing for today, would that be a member wanting advice, let's say, from Portfolio Committee on Higher Education? If a member in the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education wants advice from the PBO, will that member request that advice through the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education? Or will that member request the advice through the Finance or Appropriations Committee or the Board that deals with it? And, of course, the critical issue is time frames. A member doesn't want to wait a month before the request for advice can only be submitted, because it has to go through a whole bureaucratic process. So this is the concept that was adopted on the 2nd of May, was to say, let's include a provision where the ability for members to request advice from the PBO is clearer. So they want to know, how can I request advice from the PBO? Where must I go? How can I deal with the PBO? I think the director is best in the PBO to respond to that. What we're trying to do is just to, again, get the discussion going, facilitate discussion. So we've put a little provision in there in Section 15 to deal with that matter. Chair, this slide is just about the consequential issues, the certain corrections that were made, and new terminology being used. I'm a little bit concerned that if we go into detail in this, we're clouding other issues, but I don't want to keep anything away from the committee. So I've tried to just show in detail where those sections are that we are dealing with. I think in the norms and standards I've said enough for now. I think that issue is not a priority issue, but it's certainly an issue that cannot be left out when we're reviewing the Act. The way forward, Chair, there's certain policy decisions that must be taken. I think critically in relation to the Parliamentary Budget Office. The issues around time frames and sequencing, that's not really changing policy. The policy still remains that there must be a predictable process when we're considering the budget. The policy remains that the Constitution requires Parliament to do oversight over the executive, the exercise of executive authority. Constitution gives the policy imperative, or the ability to make policy, to the executive. That's not to say Parliament can't influence policy or even write new policy. I think Speaker Jim Waller was very strong on that Parliament is the place where policy actually starts originating from. But as it stands at the moment, this Act is meant to enforce or to strengthen Parliament's oversight over the budget process. So when we're thinking of amending the budget, it is based on what Parliament has picked up with its performance reporting, the BRRR, Budgetary Review and Recommendation Reports, what Parliament has picked up then in the medium-term budget policy statement, and what Parliament has decided then to say, here is a problem. Higher education is a good example. We need to allocate more money there. We need to find more money. Parliament, through its oversight processes, can then make certain suggestions to National Treasury. National Treasury needs to respond. That gives the ground or the foundation for Parliament then to amend the budget if that response doesn't fit into Parliament's idea. So that's the policy that's there. Now, amending the sequencing and amending timeframes, in my opinion, does not change that policy that's there. So when I'm saying there's policy decisions for the committees to take, it pertains mostly to the Parliamentary Budget Office. I think the processes I've spoken about, the subcommittee issue we've spoken about. In terms of the legislative process, the Standing Committee on Finance is required to develop, if it deems it necessary, an amendment bill. That will be a draft bill that will be published for public comment. Following that, a decision will be taken then to introduce the bill after that. And Parliament, the committee will then introduce the bill in the National Assembly, At that stage, all the work would have been done. So the House can then go on to consider that bill that's been introduced and pass it on to the NCOP in a normal legislative process. Of course, there will be the classification of the bill, and we can deal with that. I don't want to prejudge that. I indicate there that the public hearings will be on the draft amendment bill. Because once the committee has finalized its work, it'll just go. And that's the same process that was followed when the bill was initially drafted, as well as the same process when another committee bill was done, Financial Management of Parliament Act. So, Chair, I think I'm going to stop there. It's the last slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Advocate Jenkins. We have just received the BBO's presentation. While she is handing it out, members, we must be mindful of the program of Parliament. I went through the framework this morning. And in August, the NCOP is only here for 14 days in Parliament. We are doing oversight outside Parliament. And then back in September. Then there's constituency periods. And when we come back, we're hitting the road running for the MTBBS to be processed. So the work that has to be done have to be done at the speed. Prof, are you ready? Take us through.
Thank you, Honourable Chairs, Honourable Members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Chair, I think you've heard me on numerous occasions discussing and doing this presentation. So I don't know if you want to hear it again or you just want to, I think what I'll do is maybe just give you the views again in a summative form of what the PBO is about. I think the first, and it relates to a lot of what Advocate Jenkins has said as well. I think the first point here is when the Act was crafted, and my understanding in discussions with people who crafted the Act, when the Act was crafted, there was a very specific intention for the Act to be crafted about the Moneyballs Act and about the PBO. I think also in that sense, because there was very specific intention, tinkering with something that's not broken, trying to fix something that's not broken, ain't right in this regard. So that's the broad framework, Chair. I think the big issue is we need to give effect to the Moneyballs Act. And this is not an administrative issue, it's a political issue in this regard. And I've been calling for this political discussion for some time already. Unfortunately, it gets thrown back to the administration. And I think once you do that, we'll start bickering with wording in the Act, like we've been busy doing now, Chair. I think there's a few issues that are very clear in the Act, or most of the issues are very clear. The one thing is that the PBO is an independent entity within Parliament. And I think what you need to do is work on and give effect to that independence in this regard. There's a fact that it needs to get a budget, and the budget must be provided with that support. I think thirdly, there's issues about governance. Where does it report to? And I think there's been clear discussion around the reporting structures. We talk about an advisory board and reporting to the presiding officers. And this is for the sake, I think, of impartiality. And I think the last thing is about the appointment of the director chair, which is also very clear as stated in the Act. And I think tinkering and tampering with some of the letters and wording there is also not correct. And I give you a small example. The Act says that the director will be appointed at the senior level of government. And I think what the changes being made by legal services is that it will take into cognizance experience and qualifications of the director. And again, I think here you're missing the point of the Act, which is a political issue again. So I think give effect to the Act, give vent to it, which is a political decision, and give direction in this regard, which is also critical. Also, Chair, the last point is that This institution wasn't created on a thumbsuck basis. As you know, we've looked at international experiences, best practices. We've had the first Africa conference in South Africa, which speaks about, you know, the independence of the entity, the necessity for it to be successful, the role that it can play. And we've provided a model as well for how these things can pan out. So I think it's important, Chair, that, you know, The issues are there, it's clear, It's not an administrative issue at this point in time anymore. It's a political decision, and it's a political will now up to the committee to decide to put this into effect or not yet. And I think that's where I'd like to leave it, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. Thank you for the opportunity.
Are you done? Short and sweet. Thank you, Prof. Honourable Members, there you have it. I think what we must do is that we must make this act practical for ourselves, because in the past we put ourselves under pressure. While we have 16 days for the fiscal framework processing, we did it in 10. So we put pressure on ourselves. Just giving you an example. What is very important is the program of the NCOP dealing with the Division of Revenue Bill, when tabled in February, but also the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill during the MTPBS. That the NCOP have a six-week cycle where we go back to provinces, and that impacts, that's got the impact on the time frame as it stands now in the Act. It's very, very difficult for the provinces to comply with this, especially when you've got a big province like the Northern Cape, the Free State, etc. Honourable Members, are there inputs from your side? Receive the presentations, questions, clarities. The polls are, please come in as a co-chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the issue of the six-week cycle, Chair, I would like to know that the presentation indicates that once the information is in the public domain, it means discussions can unfold. Yes, and now I am wondering, what harm will it do? What harm will it do if provinces start engaging with the information the moment it hits the public domain? What harm will it do? Why must it wait for someone now to go to the province, do the public hearing, etc., etc.? Isn't that a window for an opportunity really to sort of stretch our six-week cycle? But my main concern is, what harm will it do if provinces start engaging even before members are dispatched to the provinces for briefing? That's my first question, Chair. Can I bring my other one?
Above. We are in a workshop.
We are in a workshop. Thank you. Thank you very much. My other concern about the PB, the Budget Office, Chair, maybe from an uninformed position. I think the committee would be able to make informed decisions, Chairperson. The gentleman, the presenter here, seems to be saying the process is held back because maybe political decisions are not forthcoming. On that one, my submission would be maybe some scenario, sketch a number of scenarios, which scenarios will then enable the politicians to make informed decisions, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Just on the matter raised by Dr. Matema regarding the provinces engaging earlier, what we do as finance and appropriation is inviting the provinces, the chairs of finance, with their staff component to the February session, the lock-up session, as well as the briefing by the Minister of Finance, repeated again during the MTPBS when the Minister briefed Parliament. Then they are invited again, also in between. So that is strengthening the tie with the provinces and to gain some time. Number two, I think it was Honourable McCaughey.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm referring to the document we received yesterday, as well as today, that's the Act, with its tracking in it. Just a couple of points in there. In definitions, point one, I see the word Parliament has been highlighted there, National Council of Parliament. Was this an error? There is no National Council of Parliament that I know of. We only have a National Council of Provinces. Yeah. So I just think, obviously, we need to correct things like that. In general, it seems to me that when this Act was drafted, the drafter, with all due respect to him or her, must have thought that we had about five departments in this government, because then we might have been able to do what this proposes in the time allowed for us. Because if you just read through it, I mean, just Section 5, for example, the procedure prior to introduction of the national budget, just those requirements through there, that on its own could take a year. If we have to, each department must come, each department must present, do all these things, and then it says strange things to me, like a committee reporting to the National Assembly. Do they not all report?
It would be very useful if you say 10,
yes, certainly. In 4.4, 5 sub 4, it says a committee reporting to the National Assembly. It could be any committee, it could be all of them. It's not specific. Do they all report, or is it just one or two who wish to do so? It's not clear to me quite what we are saying. It says if a committee is reporting, that is what they must do, but are they all going to report, or just some of them? And then we add in number 6, additional budgetary and recommendation reports may be submitted at the discretion of a committee, submitted presumably to the House, which is going to then further compound this time limit and the amount of work we have to deal with within a certain period. I would just like to know that we've looked at this from a practical point of view, because really we've got such a tight framework as it is. Now we speak about loose time, and then we're going to trim it down again a bit more. I think we need to actually know exactly what it means to do all this. If I can move on and just refer to...
Would you mind if I make just a procedural suggestion?
Yes, sir.
Because we started the workshop. Now it's kind of a question and answer session where we're making comments, asking questions. But if we're workshopping it, why don't we deal with a question, tease it out? Because we're trying to make progress. Otherwise, we're going to have a whole set of comments and questions, and then at the end of it, we don't know where we are. So, for example, your previous question,
yep,
we might be able to resolve that by thinking,
okay,
we may not. But then we go through it issue by issue. Otherwise, we're just going to walk out here and ask a whole lot of questions.
All right, let's take two at a time, and then we carry on. Thank you, Honourable Honourable.
Are you done?
Yeah.
If that's acceptable.
Yes.
Comments are you in agreement?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Jenkins, Prof. First two inputs.
Okay, no, thank you, Chair. I think with the first two questions coming from Honourable Member back there, I don't think there's any harm that can be done by provinces dealing with it. The question that has just arisen, and that's why we're making the suggestion, is can provinces deal with legislation that has not been referred to them? If prior to the fiscal framework being passed, the Division of Revenue Bill is not referred to a committee, And the question that has then arisen, how can the provinces deal with the Division of Revenue Bill or the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill if it's not even in the NCOP and it hasn't found its way through there? Be that as it may, I would agree with you that it's in the public domain and they can start preparing for it, they can look at it. They can certainly not take decisions because there's nothing to take a decision on. It's not a document that's been tabled in the province. But there's nothing preventing them from preparing and moving forward. The issue of the political decisions that's necessary to clarify the PBO, its status and its operational procedures, I would agree with you there. I mean, we're working on scenarios. It's not just a political issue, it's also a financial issue. I mean, what is the budget that we can set aside? So I think it's quite a complicated thing, but the scenarios, and even then costing those scenarios, is certainly necessary to do it. Chair, just with the other issues, the workshop issues, on that was a mistake in the definitions. That's, we're working on things like that. And the drafters at the time when we set this procedure out, it was a very interesting exercise. I'm going to be, I have to do this. I mean, the drafters were the committee. I can mention who was in that committee. But they were, and we were advising, I was advising at the time, and I had a colleague that was the main advisor in this thinking, I've lost her name now, but that's a pity, I'm good friends with her. Well, I was working quite closely with her. We set out certain time frames and what must be done, and it's all very ambitious. And the purpose of this exercise is to make it less ambitious and to make it more practical. But what's happening in terms of Section 5, Honourable McLaughlin, in terms of what the departments must do, they are presently doing that. They are required to come to the portfolio committees and present their drafts or their strategic plans, their annual performance plans, and have that discussion with the committees after the budget has been introduced. And for the committee then to deal with those issues, to interrogate it, and to see whether the budget is appropriate for those kind of plans that they're presenting. When it comes to the budgetary review and recommendation reports, this has to be done. Each committee that's overseeing a department must submit that report. So it's sub 4, we kept it a committee, because it could be any committee. You also have your focused committees in the National Assembly, for instance, the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. They're not overseeing a department, so they're not going to submit a budgetary review and recommendation report to the House. It's not required of them. But certainly each of the portfolio committees will have to do it. The question... Sure.
Yes?
Is somebody, some person, somebody actually checking the reports that come to see that each department is actually, as you say, in 5.1 reading with reference to the following, and then there's A, B, C, D. Are each one of those things checked? Are the departments actually doing that? And where does the monitoring of that happen? I mean, if the committee itself just sits and gets a report, they're not necessarily looking at this bill or the act while they're doing that. Is somebody checking that this actually all happens? Is my question, and is there some practical way of ensuring that it happens?
Chair, through you, we have our division in Parliament committees that looks after this, that will ensure that there's compliance with these provisions. So it's an issue of compliance. We also have our internal audit, although they look more at Parliament's financial management issues. The National Assembly table is also focused on what's happening in the House, because all these reports must go through the House. So we have those systems in place. I'm not in a position to say exactly who is responsible for that, but it is being checked. At the time when we passed this legislation, we went through a whole process of conscientizing committee section as well as chairpersons of committees that this must be done at a specific time. In the meantime, also in a specific format. I think my colleague Advocate Tao is quite involved with ensuring that we have consistency in how we compile our budgetary review and recommendation reports. I want to just emphasize that it's a critical part of the process. I mean, without this sort of performance report of departments, Parliament cannot start making suggestions of how the budget should be reallocated or reprioritized. So it is a critical way, and certainly that being the case, you need your checks and balances. You need your control system. Sure.
Coming from that end, it does support or that the executive does get some of these reports from us, and they come time. Not that the executive is necessarily active on that position, but they simply come from Parliament.
You covered?
No,
I'm still with Mr. McLaughlin. Are you covered?
If I may, Chair, my concern is, I understand what you say, but when we get around to doing some oversight, then you pick up certain things haven't happened, or there are things that have happened that shouldn't have happened if this actually happened, if you follow what I'm saying. Because there's non-compliance. There's deviations that happen all over the place. Whereas if this had been properly applied, that probably would not have happened. So that's what raises my concern. If I can explain it a bit further, we as the Appropriations Committee have a responsibility. We appropriate funds. If it turns out, as we're hearing in the press and all that on the moment, there's corruption going on, money's being shoveled off left, right and centre, we're ultimately responsible for that because we appropriated those funds. And if we've appropriated them to some kind of purpose that is completely different to this and it's been subverted somewhere, the ball comes back to us. And I'm just trying to think, how are we going to be protected ourselves as a committee when we appropriate funds that are misused because a procedure hasn't been followed or something's gone through the gaps? That's the sort of basis of my concern here. Thank you, Chair.
It's very important at that point that you also look in at the history of this department over the past 3 or 4 years to get the trend, but what's happening here? And then the committee zoom into that. What's been done in the Northern Cape Legislature on where they deal with the annual reports? SCOPA, the Finance Committee, and the Portfolio Committee, say on agriculture, is meeting with the Agriculture Department. So it's actually 3 committees dealing with that matter that the Honourable Member raised. Right, we covered 1 and 2, 3 and 4. Who's number 3? I can't remember. You must know your number. Honourable Mohai, 4, please. Honourable Lees.
My number?
No, you must write it down. Not me. Mohai and then Honourable Lees. Sorry. Or you come in when you feel to come in. Taking it clause by clause, section by section.
But we've asked all of our questions that we think are important with respect to section 5. We've got the answers, we've made proposals if necessary, then we are not necessarily clause by clause. Made proposals, they then attend to the proposals that come up.
Are there any other questions on section 5? Are you satisfied? Because a draft bill will be submitted, and then we will be going through it again, plus public hearings. I want to give to Honourable Mohai. He raised his hand timelessly, and then Honourable Lees. Yes.
No, Chair, my simple clarity area is, if you look on the PBO document, it says the ideal model and also the unresolved discussion. In fact, issues in many ways that are agreed upon, but we have not formalized them. So, and then because when you look at the current status of PBO, it clarifies what are the limitations and a lot of issues that we need to attend to. Despite these limitations, I know that at the committee's level, there's been a qualitative improvement in terms of how we elevated the role of the PBO. Even
in vis-a-vis other structures like FFC and so forth, we've equally created a platform for discussions. And there's been value add once we step up a strategic, in fact, focus will be on a strategic role. So my question is, in fact, my area of clarity is that, isn't it required that we should clarify the model that we want as Parliament? Will it have a bearing on the draft? Some of the areas will have a bearing on the draft legislation, because in my view, there was absolute consensus when we had the conference last year, when we were discussing amongst committees of finance about the independent role and the kind of location of the PBO that we want in our own parliamentary system. So that we clarify this without subjecting it, otherwise it will not rise to the occasion if the current status exists. My view is that there's a way when we need to clarify to finalize the model of a PBO that we want. I don't know, but my view is that it relates to what we want to do to improve in terms of the legislation, if there are requisite amendments. So we are clear in terms of the model of a PBO that we want. Thanks. I just want a guide, a response on that.
Well, these, we take the two and then can I get a...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to Prof and Frank. The question of how the process works, I think, is somewhat fraught, because it's not as simple as simply talking about the bills that are tabled and then they get passed. The whole purpose of talking about them is to consider whether amendments are required. And so you can't start talking about something which may be amended and you have to start all over again talking about it. You can't have public hearings about something that much may change and you start all over again with more public hearings. There has to be a fixed timeline. It simply can't work formally in a loose arrangement. Of course, there's nothing to stop us talking about a proposal, but it can't be the formal discussion. It simply can't. And so there needs to be fixed timelines. Now, our problem is that the timelines that and Frank, you're right, I was peripherally involved in it, but we were largely excluded, if you remember. The committee didn't include opposition very much in the last parliament when these things were drawn up, and we objected at the time. But nevertheless, I was there, and I take responsibility. They're too ambitious. We all recognize that they're too ambitious. We really are not able to do justice to it. And so whilst the timelines have to be there to ensure that there's a proper process, they need to be extended and looked at more carefully. And that's the prime reason that we're looking at this bill. We spent months, years in fact, Prof, years going to Canadian models and all the other models and finally decided on the model for South Africa. We cannot do that now between now and the 31st of August. And I put it to you, Madam Chair, that we actually can't do the limited process that we're looking at by the 31st of August. It just can't be done. So the time frames, I'm afraid... In an informal way, of course, in the NCOP, the chair's right. We used to look at these things informally before they came to us to give us some understanding. We'd come and sit in the NA committees and so on. But the formal process has to be a formal process. There have to be fixed timelines. Those timelines have to be practical. And that's where the nub of the problem lies, is in the practicality of that. And so... Then there are a few other practical issues that have to be. I mean, the question of National Treasury's transparency needs to be looked at. We can't ask National Treasury for more information and then weeks and months go by before we get it. There's got to be a timeline dictating the time that National Treasury has to respond when we ask for additional information. The other problem that we've encountered, and particularly in the last few cycles, is how exactly do amendments to the appropriations bill get dealt with? What is the format? What are the timelines? It doesn't really exist at the moment. So, and then, just to get back to the formal timelines, it can't be left to the Parliamentary Programming Committee to determine these timelines. It simply can't. Just look, it's a political committee. It needs to be formalized in legislation. So, you know, I mean, an example is the secret ballot. I mean, it's now gone to court. How many things are going to be referred from, in terms of the timelines, to court if we leave it to the Programming Committee? It can't be. Madam Chair, and then in terms of the PBO, I mean, it's been, as I've just said, a long process to establish what is an absolutely vital institution. And so it concerns me, and I absolutely agree with Prof, it must be independent. But Frank says it's not clear. Well, then we need to make it clear. It has to be independent. There cannot be any doubt about that. And then, Mr. Chairman, I know that we sometimes disagree with Prof on this one, but it has to be accessible to the ordinary MP like it is in other jurisdictions. It cannot be through some politically loaded advisory committee. And I understand the resource constraints that the PBO has at the moment. I mean, when we looked at the other models around the world, I mean, they have hundreds of staff members. Not just 10 or 15, hundreds. And so there is that restriction, and I absolutely understand. But we can't put into law that restriction and say, well, actually, this advisory committee has to determine whether the PBO will look at a matter raised by MP. It can't be like that. And so, Mr. Chairman, those are the high-level things that we've picked up. But just on the process thing, Frank, I mean, I love tracking, I really do, and it's great. But what happens now when mine's not in color? So now you go away and you make some more suggestions. How do we follow all this? You know, what's the next document going to look like? We're not agreeing to any of this, so you can't add it in or take it out. It's a workshop. So I'm just worried about the process of how we deal with these long-winded discussions like I've just been giving, and I hope I've made some points in my long-windedness. But I'm concerned about the process, co-chairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairs, Honourable Members. Excellent questions. I think, again, questions that we've heard and tried to engage with before, as Honourable Mohai and Honourable Lee has quite correctly said. I think, Chairs, maybe just for those who are a bit new to this process, internationally there are three types of PBOs. And the first type of PBO you find is one that is a budget, for want of a better term, reviewing, or a budget softening kind of PBO. Now this PBO does nothing, and all it does is it allows its members and gives its members the abilities to understand the budget. Then you have a budget amending legislature. Now we're talking about parliaments here. So the first one is a parliament that does nothing, but just gets the advice, rubber stamping, in other words. The next legislature is a budget amending legislature, where South Africa is at this point. So we amend the budget in that sense. The third area is a budget changing legislature, like you have in the USA or like you have in Japan, where when the executive puts a budget to Parliament, Parliament tables its own budget in opposition, and there's a negotiation about whose budget is going to be accepted. And you've heard about in the States where they come to a lockdown, etc., etc. In Japan, you have a similar kind of thing. Through our act, we've accepted, I think, and this is important, not only from a legalistic point of view, but from a content point of view and a political point of view, we've accepted a budget amending legislature. In other words, we can change the budget in this regard. When we talk about a budget influencing or changing, budget changing legislature, we talk about changing the fiscal framework as well. In other words, changing the policy. So when, as a government, we say that our fiscal policy is X, Y, and Z, and monetary policy is X, Y, and Z, that's our macroeconomic and our fiscal framework. We don't say in our budget amending legislation that we're going to change the fiscal framework, because that entails a whole new discussion around policy. What we're talking about is amending the numbers in that sense. It's also a different understanding, technically, and from an economic perspective, or public finance perspective, on this thing. So South Africa, at this point, we have budget amending legislation. That's it. We don't even touch the fiscal framework. We can't, because we leave that to the executive to do. Unless we decide otherwise, as well. So that's the first point of view, Chair. Given all these processes and visits that we've had, and the act that we've had, Honorable Shoppe Sitoli as well, we've accepted a model, and I think if you can just put it up there, today, which I think we discussed in the last committee, Honorable Dr. Mateme and Honorable Hanekom, I think for the new members again. We said this is the kind of governance arrangement, and this committee, the four committees and the advisory board, and I think you were there, Advocate Jenkins as well, accepted this model. So we said, you know, it must adhere to the arrangement in the legislation, which is fine. It accounts to the executive authority, and here the executive authority is the speaker and the chair. And this is to address the issue of non-partisanship, etc., etc. We said these are the responsibilities of the director. The service delivery model, it would be independent, ring-fenced entity within parliament. The legal status, we said it's a separate juristic person. These discussions were held. And we came to this kind of arrangement. And again, you know, it's funny that we don't bring these things into the processes that we're discussing, because we reinvent the wheel every time. And for that purpose, honorable members, I'm happy this is my last year, because to come to an end with this, you know, would be the final cherry on the top, engaging with this process. And that's why I appreciate, Honorable Hanekom, your input. You know, let's come to finalization. So this was the model. We also have an advisory board who are here present today, and I hope they give the inputs into this process as well and assist us in making a final decision on the model going forward. So that's the situation we have with the kind of PBO in this regard. Honorable Lee, you're totally correct. In Korea, South Korea, you have a PBO that comprises of 2,000 people, and they serve individual members of parliament with a 10-day turnaround. So any MP can walk into the PBO and say, you know, we want you to do X amount of work, and within 10 days they get the work done. Because we're such a small outfit, because we're new, there's never been a PBO in South Africa, because we work through the committee system, because you have to take cognizance of South Africa's system as well, and the conditions, we said, for the purposes of non-partisanship, to provide support to all members, all political parties, we will work through the committee system. Now, unfortunately, the PBO can't do anything about the political structural constraints that is faced within a committee, whether it's an ANC chairperson or not. That we can't change in this regard. But what we can do is say, if you want work done, and I think we've done work on police, etc., go through the committee and tell the chair to send a memo or a letter through to the director, and the work will get done. And I think so far there hasn't been any constraint in that regard. So it's not the political advisory committee, but it's the committee itself with the chair that decides, you know, that's how the work. And I think so far it's worked well. There's no reason why we should not prevent independent support to individual members, given the fact that there's limited capacity in Parliament because of lack of content, resource, legal, etc., etc. If we strengthen it, that resource will be there. 10 people hardly can survive or or support even through committee in this regard. But there's no reason why it can't. There's no reason why we can't expand it to 2,000 members. But then it's up to you to decide on that. You can't leave it to us and say, you know, show us the model. There's the model. You decide what you want. As Honorable Maher says, we'll implement it. Finish. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Yankees.
Thank you, Chair. Co-chairs, good morning. Good morning, honored members. Good morning, colleagues. Chair, I just wanted to add, there's a point that I think Frankie raised as well, the independence and what does it mean and how does it get operationalized. I think the Act is quite capturing that quite clearly. The three elements there that when you look at whether an entity is independent within the government sector, to have budget, to a clear mandate, and to have access to appoint the staff. I think the legislation, the money bills captures it quite clear to say Section 15 gives the mandate of the budget office. What does budget office has to do in terms of the clear mandate? And it mentions the budget, must have budget. And in a set aspect that the director can appoint the deputy directors and the staff. So that, for our discussion, even in the previous workshop, it does give that clarity in terms of independence or not, you know, those three elements at all. I think this might come again later in terms of the issue of independence at all. Thanks, Chair. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's allow the responses and there are some questions.
Thank you, Co-Chairperson. Just on the previous one, my colleague that advised the committee who drafted the legislation, she was Alta Folcher. I think her dad was the first chief legal advisor after 94 here as well. Sorry, I forgot her name. The question from Honorable Mohai has been answered. So the model, I think that's exactly what's required. And as Professor said, that discussion has been held. The issue on the process of the bills, Honorable Lee, your question, the requirement for fixed timelines and that it cannot continue forever or sort of a ping-pong situation. I think the background is that we have to have public hearings on the bills. And if there are amendments being done, especially if it's substantial amendments, we'll have to have public hearings on those as well. The Act at the moment requires that you must have public hearings on the proposed amendments as well. And the Constitutional Court has actually agreed with that position. That is so, but it's not a table tennis situation. What I want to address specifically is the requirements for fixed timelines, and as you say, it's very ambitious at that time, and I think if you remember, Alta, she had this whole table that she had drawn up exactly when what can happen and that you have to do all of this in a certain cycle, in a year. In the end, it's the 365 days of the year that's limiting us. I mean, Sweden has a... Israel has a 24-month budget cycle, and I think Sweden works in a 7-year business cycle where they make smaller amendments, but it's sort of a 7-year cycle that they keep. So there's different ways of looking at it, but we have the Public Finance Management Act and the Constitution, and we have an annual budget cycle, so that's where we are. It's not something that I want to discuss. The issue of the fixed time frames, if I may put the question back to yourself and to the committee, it appears that to have just something in the bill that says, in the amendment bill that would say within a reasonable time or as soon as possible, that's not going to satisfy. So we have to come up with time frames and allow Parliament to change those time frames, given that there might be a circumstance that requires changed time frames. That's what I'm hearing, Chairperson, and I think that we can do. That's not a problem. The issue of the process, the track changes and so on, I would like to say where we are now. Documents that's been handed out is working documents, live documents. So it's a very difficult situation. It's not like a bill that's been introduced with sort of four corners and that you can change it and show the changes. So what we're working towards is actually a draft bill that will get through the committee to say this is what we want. And that's also why in the beginning I said there's certain priority areas I want to look at first. If we can nail those down, then one can look at the smaller things and see whether we've done it, the corrections we make through the definitions and so forth. But it's just a suggestion. If there's another way that we can do it, it's good. We can actually have a document, if you want, to say these are the discussions we've had.
I tried to do it at a very high level with the discussion document itself. See, at the end, I'm trying to capture just the salient, the very high-level points after each meeting to say, this is what the meeting has decided, this is the mandate we received. In terms of the timelines, we've made a note there what the committee decided last time. They want moderate review. They don't want no time frames. So I'm getting that sense again from the committee, and we can deal with that. But thank you, sir.
Coaches, Prof, yeah, I absolutely agree that if it's just a channel of communication, which has been the case, it's not a problem. But a suggested, it's not proposed, I don't know what the right word is, on page 15, clause 15.3, the alternative, other committees or members, etc., related with the concurrence of the board. Now, that can't work. So that's where I was coming from. I'm sorry if I misrepresented the situation. So thank you for that.
Jefferson, thank you. I'm covered the first part of my observation by the Honorable Lees about the time frames and stuff, and obviously, you know, we agreed that is necessary. And we'll have to stick with something like that, you know, for the discipline and to be able to do our work in time. Coming back to the, you know, to the, what the professor said, yes, I think, you know, we are all in agreement that it needs to be an independent body, like they explained. My question is, the position that they are, what do we mean? And I think we need to define exactly what we mean by independent. The fact of the matter is you can be, you know, independent in that way, and then you can still toe the line of information coming from Treasury or whatever. Do we mean, you know, independence? Well, that can it mean also that the PBO is going to take a position and say, but this part in the budget we don't necessarily agree with. You know, obviously we need to have a proper sort of a balanced approach. And I think at the moment, with all due respect, Prof, I think you are doing excellent work. But I haven't seen that yet. And you know, I'm just wondering whether that is maybe possible. That is the first thing. And then, you know, the accessibility, you know, we discussed that you have limited sort of, you know, ability at the moment, but, you know, we need to build, as it was said by the chairperson, we need to build something that will work for us. Thank you, chairperson.
We must be mindful of the fact that Parliament's got a short fall on 1.2 billion rand. Post our freeze. Yes, post our freeze. That's the reality we face. The effect of fiscal consolidation that we were going to have this for the next 3 years. On the Dr. Matema, can we first take, sorry, Dr. Honorable Matema, Honorable Matsu Shupin, his hand was...
thanks, Chair. I'll be very brief at least this time. Let me start by welcoming the presentations. One area that I want to zoom into is the issue that you mentioned, and you left it hanging. In your presentation, you spoke about the technical task team, and you said with your engagement with the chairperson of the portfolio committee was that there should be a political technical task team. If you can clarify that. Two, if you go to your slide in terms of the model that you are proposing, while you are independent, the people who is independent, which is good, but it accounts to the political authority, because I take them as anybody who leads that organization would be an officer, accounting officer. Now, you see there, you see the director shall have the same duties and responsibilities as the accounting officer, stroke authority. If you can clarify here, because I think the accounting authority are people who are elected, and if then you have a director who has the same powers as members of parliament, it's going to be a serious challenge, because just as NMOS is independent, and it's also going to be on the same path in terms of party. If I read it correctly, the accounting officer or accounting authority. Maybe you can clarify that.
Thank you. Dr. Ntema?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I was coming still on the issue of the six-week cycle. Because I think here we have an opportunity to innovate as Parliament, yes. My first question was, what harm will it do if provinces begin to engage even before briefings happen? Response was that no harm really. My proposal to this meeting, to this workshop, would be then, why don't we sort of introduce a sort of a pre-briefing phase, so that when the briefing stage comes, the ground is ready, things run smoothly, people are familiar with the particular piece of legislation. I think we do have an opportunity here to innovate in that way and enable ourselves to remain within the six-week cycle. That's my first point. Second point, Chairperson, the issue of this PPO. I'm asking myself, where are the blockages as of now? Looks like as a parliament we've picked our own models of the three. Looks like we have picked what we think will work for us. Now, why can't the process be concluded? My question. Thank you, Chair.
I noted, the Honourable Member. Sorry that I missed you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just apologies, I'm not well today. I am seeking a clarity on the issue raised by Mr. Jenkins on the emergency situation. I heard him saying that in emergency situation, the minister, there's nothing that prevents the Minister of Finance to come up with a, I don't know what he was saying, whether it was coming up with a bill or something like that. I have no problem with that, but I just want to know that, because the legislature has got a fundamental constitutional function of oversight. What is it that we can do to make sure that whenever such a situation arises, we are not found wanting? Because there should be no stage where we are unable to do oversight, because that is our primary function as a parliament, to oversee the spending. We can't come with an excuse that, no, we did not oversee that amount because it was something that was made by me. We can't be excused for that. So what is it that we can do? Thank you.
I take the Honourable Members back, I can't remember correctly, year 2014 or 15, when we had a special appropriation for ESCOM. It was a special bill that was tabled, just to refresh your minds. You can reply We will come at the stage, members, where we take it page by page. If there's any more questions on the document that was tabled.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So I actually want to start with, okay, let me start with the easier one, clarity on what I mean with the political team. The suggestion coming from Honorable Karim last time was that there's a subcommittee that can start dealing on a more regular basis with his amendment process of the bill, because I think his concern is that we're not going to make the deadline to do the MTBBS in terms of the new act. So that was a suggestion from him. That's the one part of his suggestion. The other part was dealing with the Parliamentary Budget Office and taking that model forward. There was a suggestion that there's a political team, possibly the four chairs of the four committees, to deal with the executive authority, with the speaker and the chairperson, and to have that discussion with them. That's how I understood it. The nuts and bolts of the work doing here has been done by the technical team, which consists of Mr. Prince, myself, Dr. Yankees, and various others, Advocate Tao. It's not a fixed team, it's a loose team. We coordinated through email, and we consulted with Treasury where we're going to. So that's where we are, and that's just to facilitate the work that the subcommittee will do, basically. So that's that. Chair, I just want to go back to Honorable Lisi. He spoke about a question on how exactly are we going to do an amendment to the appropriation bill. I don't think I've dealt with that. And we had that the challenge very recently where suggestions or proposals were made to amend the appropriation bill, but the proposals came after the budget debates in the mini plenaries were held. And it came 2 days before those budget votes were going to be decided in the plenary, in the National Assembly, and the appropriation where we're going to be passed. I think it's a very difficult question, actually, Honourable Lee, because what you want to do, you want to facilitate Parliament's authority to amend money bills. That's the whole purpose of this Act. At the same time, given the limited resources we have, speaking from the administration point of view, you want to ensure that there's sort of sufficient time to deal with what members want to do. So what the Act requires really is to say that these amendments should come through a long process. And I'm going to say this is what the Act requires as part of its ambition to deal with proposals coming from your BRRRs, to deal with reports in the MTBPS and how it did or did not feature in the main budget, and then to deal with those. So in fact, the Act doesn't want this sort of politically expedient amendments coming out at the last moment. Be that as it may, I know, that's why I said it so slowly. I really don't mean anything nasty by it, but this is actually what the Act wants. What I said earlier as well about the policy area is fundamentally that of the executive, and Parliament's area is the oversight area over those policy decisions. So what I wanted to say is, be that as it may, what is necessary when we're dealing with how can we bring a budget proposal or an amendment to the appropriation bill or the division of revenue bill, I think the first question would be, should we provide for that in legislation to say this is what you must do should a member or a committee want to amend a proposal? Should that be dealt with in a guideline? Because fundamentally we'll have to look at the whole program of Parliament. I think at the programming phase of the budget, political parties need to be very aware of when they should start raising possible amendments so that there can be decisions taken to say, well, let's just stall or let's just postpone one or two of those budget votes that we are going to have, or not a budget vote, but a debate at least on the budget, until after we've considered that amendment. I mean, for me, it's rather logical. To debate a budget and to amend it afterwards, that hasn't happened in Parliament. You want to do the proposed amendments, you want to say this is what we've done, and then you debate that amendment as well before we're going to vote on it. So that's how I said. So we have to bring that into Parliament's programming, and from where I'm sitting at this point in time, I would say it's not a matter to write in legislation. It's rather a matter to be acutely aware of when political parties are planning their submissions on the budget and when to bring those proposals. And further than that, I don't have an answer for that because it's a very difficult point. I really would not want to give advice which basically curtails Parliament's powers to deal with legislation and the budget. That's not the intention of Section 77(3) or the Money Bills Act. I think, Chair, very similarly, the issue of a pre-briefing stage on the Division of Revenue Bill and to deal with that, I think also I agree, it's an innovative solution. It's something that I think provinces would really appreciate. And I would even suggest that discussion should take into account what we can do with the medium-term budget policy statement. It's at the introduction of the medium-term budget policy statement. And there's no specific role for provinces to play in that process. But it affects them because it deals with the forward-looking budget of the whole country. It's at that point where one can put it in legislation. It might solve the problem. But nothing stops provinces or even parliaments at this point in time to create mechanisms to deal with that. To say, let's create space for ourselves to discuss the MTBPS with provinces and to see how it impacts on provinces. Let's get dedicated provincial feedback on the MTBPS. Maybe not all provinces would want to give feedback, but it's certainly a very valuable point. I think it would help if you put it in legislation to say there must be a provincial discussion on it. It will help, but it's not going to solve the problem necessarily, because if it doesn't happen, you can't say the budget is therefore unlawful. What you will get is a lot of objections from political parties saying, we didn't do that, so we can't proceed with the budget and so on. But it's a matter that needs to go further back and where provinces need to give that input, because once the MTBPS is passed and we get the fiscal framework for the next year, there's very little a province can do to influence the division of revenue. It's almost if the door is closed on provinces.
Yes. Yes.
Everything you say is being recorded.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can the technocrats then again do the scenario planning to guide the provinces? To guide the provinces with regard to the pre-briefing situation, because expertise may not be available to the same extent in all these provinces, so some leadership is required in that regard, some scenarios, which scenarios, some of them may not suit the material conditions in the provinces to the same extent. So, my suggestion is scenario sketching would assist as a guide to the provinces. Thank you,
Dr. Matema. Yes, a pre-briefing is being done by the PBO on the tabling of the national budget. And then afterwards, the pre-budget and the post-budget briefing, and then also the similar recipe with the MTBPS. In the Northern Cape, and I'm representing the Northern Cape in the NCLP and in the Finance Appropriations Committee, I forward the documentation that's tabled by the PBO in our committees to my legislator, to the Chair of Chairs, Honorable Roy, and I ask him to circulate that to the members to bring them up on the same level. That's one of the scenarios and one of the ways to go about. But thank you for that proposal. Honorable Gaila?
Yes, Chairperson. Just one...
Can you please speak into the mic? Thank
one
you.
Issue here. The appointment of director... Advocate Jenkins. I think a director should be appointed by the committees. After all, they're only going to meet once to appoint a director. We should not leave that to the chairpersons. It just does not seem right. Let the committees appoint the director. That's the only one today. Thank you.
Are there any other inputs? Honorable McLaughlin.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I may be overplaying my hand in a sense here, but I would just ask if we could, as far as possible, in whatever amended bill we come up with, avoid expressions such as we have in Section 6, I think it's 6.6, and 6.10, where we use the words without delay, and then again in Section 8, 5, A, B, and C, yeah, A, B, and C, where we use the expressions appropriate balance, are reasonable, ensuring the cost of recurrent spending is not deferred to future generations. How do we do that? I mean, at the moment, we're already doing it. The next part was going to have to deal with 200 billion rands worth of debt, because we haven't done this. So to say it in here just doesn't seem to have much meaning. And I'll just ask, can we avoid that kind of thing? Let's make it something that we can actually do. Thank you, Chair.
They will look into that, Advocate Jenkins and his team. Honourable members, on page one, the tracking document, there's definitions. The matter was raised about the Council of Parliament, it must be the National Council of Provinces, to be corrected. Page two is also definitions. Page 3 continues with the definitions. A short page 3. Sorry? It's a tracking, the one with the writing here on the right hand side. It will be helpful if every document was in color. Yeah. Because the color indicates a certain activity. Amri. I take the honourable members to page 4. Honourable McLaughlin.
Just on page 2. Am I assuming correctly that we're removing the definition of secretary because the secretary is not mentioned in the Act? Is that correct? Right at the bottom of page 2, Chair.
Okay, Jenkins?
Yes, that's correct, Chairperson. There's no mention of the Secretary of Parliament in the Act. So there's no need for the definition. That came, I mean, that's just something that...
Verify? Page 4? That was the establishment of the committees, page 5, the procedures. When I worked through the document of the members, it just came to my mind, isn't it possible that the national budget can be tabled a week earlier and the MTBBS a week earlier? But then we must look at the Reserve Bank that's got their policy meeting on that meeting that's every quarter. So maybe that will have an impact. I'm not 100% sure, but... Page 5. Excuse me.
Chairperson?
Yes.
On page 5?
Yes.
May I request that in section 5 sub 6 we just define it a little more clearly? That additional budgetary report may be submitted by whom, to whom, and at the discretion of which committee? It's not quite clear to me. Is it one of the finance committees, or is it the actual departmental committee? If we could just make it clear what we're talking about there, please.
Fine, Secretariat, you've noted that. Anyone on page 5? page 6. There was a matter raised, the words without delay, Honorable Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, Chair. That is, as I said during the presentation, sort of the alternative position to having those strict time frames. And the presentation today suggested that we reconsider those. For instance, to keep certain time frames, as you say, or another date determined by Parliament, or as reasonably close or practically possible. What we'll do is we will remove that and put in options there. To say you can either have this option or that option, both of which will follow the decision taken by the committee to have a moderate view, to have something in between no time frames and very strict time frames. So what we just need to make it less ambitious, more practical. Thanks, Chair.
It's also specific to the fiscal framework. At present it's 16 days, maybe we can take it to 20, 21 days, because it's working days, excluding weekends. Same with the Division of Revenue Bill and the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, to stretch that period, to give more space for provinces, because that is the issue, for the provinces to engage, also with public hearings. Honourable members, page 7. Honourable Hanekom.
Thank you, Chair. Just with regards to the expression we were just discussing, that without delay, the sort of difficulty I have is without delay, and I know you've already agreed on this, but it means that it's really peremptory, it's immediate, because anything can be a delay. And what happens if you don't do it within whatever you're going to regard as immediately or without delay? There's nothing to say what happens then if you have failed to do it. I know in some instances, if you don't perform within the time, then it's just not going to happen. That's fine, we accept that. If you haven't submitted something within a time frame, an amendment, a proposed amendment, well, it's just not going to happen. That's fine, you're out of time. But in a situation like this, what happens if it's not complied with? So I do understand where you're going to with it, but even if we make it a specific time within 7 days like it used to be, what do we say about if it doesn't happen, if it comes on the 9th day? What then? Can we say something about it in the bill? Can we think about that? Thank you.
Do you want to comment, Advocate Jenkins?
We've heard a sort of a definition of without delay before. Maybe we could repeat that again. If we agree, I would agree that there should be some stipulated period. And if we are going the route of a subcommittee and a technical subcommittee, they can consider what would be an appropriate period, and ultimately that should be considered by the SSE anyway. And feedback would be obtained from all the stakeholders from whom we obtain feedback before finalization. But I would support that proposal that we put in a step. So we don't have to start explaining the notion of without delay. Just agree that there should be a stipulated period.
Great. Thank you. Honourable Hanekom read my mind. Page 7. I was sitting with this thing last night. anyone on page 7? Thank you, members. We go to page 8. I've just got one question, page 8, section 9, subsection 3, the word may. In the Act, we keep on using the word must, and here we are using the word may. Must is more stronger. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just asking. Honourable McLaughlin?
Where is the word may you were referring to, sir?
Point 9, section 9, passing of the Division of Revenue Bill. Subsection 3, the committees on appropriations may report on the Division of Revenue Bill after the adoption. Why is the word may there? They can do it or they don't have to do it.
It's Chair, the intention there was to just give that authority that only comes to be after the adoption of the fiscal framework. So it's not meant to prescribe you must now report. It's to say you only have the power to report once the fiscal framework is done. So that's what I'm trying to get there. So in those instances, you use the word may to say at this point in time, you have the authority to report. I think what we need to do here, well, I actually know what we need to do here, because this goes to time frames. That's the removal of the time frame. If you see what has been taken out there, the 30 days time limit has been taken out. So we need to reconsider that proposal to say, again, you may report only after the fiscal framework has been adopted, but such reporting must be within this time frame, unless Parliament decides otherwise, or as soon as reasonably practical after that. Or we need to bring that time frame stipulation back in. That's my understanding of it. But the may is not used to give you a discretion that you do not have to report. It's meant to say once that sort of objective fact has kicked in, you've passed the division of the fiscal framework, then your power only arises to go further.
Dr.
It actually, I think, to my mind, implies discretion. You're at liberty to report, you may not. I'm really not an English expert, but I'm just wondering how would it read if we put in the should. Is it too strong? Stronger than must? I'm not comfortable with this word may. I'm not. Thank you.
Anyone else on for page 8? Over Sheila.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think I agree with Comrade Matima, because I've made an observation that, you know, because ourselves as members of Parliament were not legal gurus. You know, these lawyers, when they write the act for us, they usually leave this may thing, so that when there is litigation, they will spend 5 weeks just in court, just talking about may. I've made that. So can't we have a situation where we are very clear whether it must be done or it must not be done? Because, you know, we spend a lot of money and a lot of time in courts, or maybe it's a job creation for the learned friends, I don't know.
I noted Honorable Hanekom and then Honorable Lees.
But I think it's just a little bit of a rewriting, Chairperson, because 9.1 is quite clear that the division of revenue must be referred to the committee for consideration and report. And then it says may report on. I think the intention here is to say it can only do this after. And so I think it needs a bit of a rewriting. So it's not about it may or may not report, it's not at all. It must report, that's clear. But can only do so after the fiscal framework has been done. So,
a bit of rewrite. Thank you. Taking us forward, Honorable Hanekom. Honorable Lees.
Mr. Chairman, given what Derek has just said, then I'm afraid then there must be some timescale. It can't delete the timescale.
Thank you, Honorable Anukum. Good point again. I think when we look at the budget, most of us see, from a public finance point of view, the budget is seen as the financial expression of your objectives, of your economic policy. So, for example, the budget will give vent to that. The fiscal framework puts the numbers together in terms of giving vent to the objectives. So you can look at the fiscal framework in that sense. What I'm saying is the policy framework, the macroeconomic policy framework, also needs to be discussed and deliberated. That's a different story. Yes. Thank you, Chief.
And just a follow-up. You know, Comrade Anacom, I didn't want you to respond because you are not a learned friend. I wanted the lawyer.
He's an experienced person.
No. I don't want, because otherwise we can sit in and talk, even in a study group, you and I, and give each other answers. I want the lawyers to answer.
Chair, I appreciate that. No problem. The intention is exactly as was discussed, that you have to report. You don't have a discretion to report on it. In fact, even the parliamentary rules requires that if Parliament must take a decision, a committee to that instrument has been referred must report. In this instance, a decision must be taken because we're dealing with the Division of Revenue Bill, and the committee needs to report so that the House can take a decision. And the use of the word may was simply there to say it's only at a certain time that your power arises that you may report. So, ma'am, I'm on a fixed salary here. I'm not trying to create jobs for my colleagues out there.
Very high salary.
Yeah, and we are going to redraft it, bringing back the issue of timeframes, so that we have a more structured approach to the process that the budget will go through and to create that certainty that we require. So the rewrite, as Honourable Anacom has suggested, is exactly what we will do. Thank you, Chair.
Prof? Sorry. Point taken. I think there's agreement that we go for the stronger word. Fine, thank you. Prof, you wanted to come in?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think again, you know, if you write academic papers, for example, may, should, etc. is not there, what it indicates to you is who's responsible. So if it's a department or a committee, so you spell that out clearly. What are they supposed to do and the time frame by when? So that actually addresses the may, etc., out of the issue in this regard.
Okay. Chairman,
I'm Zulu speaking, so I also battle with the English, but the
you know you've occasioned then.
The answer here may, in the may and the must, it's, I think that probably what would clarify it would be to place the word only after may. So may only report, and then that I think was the intention. Frank, you need to clarify.
Honourable member.
Chair, I understand why Honourable Sheila wanted Advocate Junction to comment on this, and we may not be the gurus like yourself, but at least we have that experience that in our previous life, some of us that may can either get you into water or out of water. And because of me, that's why as activists then, as unionists, you were able to win cases. It's very technical. So must, according to me, is just clear. Must. But then, Honorable Liz here is coming with something. I don't know. You don't have to. We are learning from each other. But I think we need to apply our mind and be more sober and think of the West once we are being challenged, because this is a very technical matter. So we rely on you guys, but also our little experiences will add a flavor into the whole thing. Thanks.
Remember?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Looks like we're moving to that 5 days thing that Honorable Stolle was speaking about. I don't think anybody is really wrong as such, but I personally do concur with Honorable Hanekom, and Honorable Liz explained that we just need a little bit of restructuring of the, because the explanation tells us that it doesn't mean that they should not report. And then I would actually support that, because you must know that, like you were saying, this legal language, I know I've been in situations where you are told that legally these are the words that they use. And for me, it's quite comfortable to, except that I think Honorable Hanekom said they must add something just to, so that it must not appear as if you may or you may not. So I just wanted to say, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, all the members. I think there's clarity for that. Go on.
I think it's clear what's necessary. We don't want words that create the image that there's a discretion. And we want to be certain that you have to report after a certain event has taken place within a certain time. So we'll redraft it. I think we don't have to just tinker with the one word. We can tinker with the sentence to make it crystal clear what it is that we want, and then we get feedback from the committee. Thank you. Yes, and the time frame will come in there as well.
Page 10. Mine was a short page 10. Same again with the word may there. It's fine. Honourable Motla Shippe.
10.3 here is also the same. I don't want to raise the same argument that Dr. Ander said. That may there. And it's not reading quite correctly. Let's get short. 10.3.
Do you want to elaborate, Honourable Motla Shippe?
No,
okay, fine. Page 11.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a slight concern with holding of public when I see it now. It's point A, but I think it's under number 8A, subsection 8A here. Committee on Appropriations to hold public hearings on the Appropriation Bill. We recently held public hearings in Khayelitsha. That meeting was attended by those who were available in Khayelitsha at the time, and it was essentially retired people, mothers with babies. Their understanding of what appropriation bill meant was very limited. It didn't really add anything to us as an appropriations committee. It certainly gave us insight into that community and what their concerns were, but it wasn't really relevant to what we were trying to do. And I think maybe we could maybe word this in such a way that those meetings need to be appropriate meetings. Excuse the pun, it wasn't intended. But they need to be meetings that address the issue that the committee's dealing with. Because our meeting in Khayelitsha turned out like a complaints parade. We heard every issue in that township, in that area. But we didn't hear much about the appropriation bill because I don't think they understood it and what it was all about. Thank you.
In my province, we were the first province to start the program, the Cabinet Meets the People, the Northern Cape. And then we took it further. The legislature meets the people. And that's precisely what happened. They take that opportunity because they're speaking to Parliament. They're speaking to the legislature, Finis and Clark. And we always had a team going ahead of that specific meeting to give a pre-meeting briefing, like the PBO is doing, to try and get them on the same page. It's very difficult, but they get to see what you are doing in Parliament. That is the other picture, I think, which is also important. Dr. Matema.
Chairperson, I fully agree with your explanation, but the rider I would like to put out of experience, Chairperson, when you go into a public hearing, the, shall I say, the topic or the task at hand guides as to who the stakeholders should be. Remember the petroleum bill, the mineral and petroleum bill, which we had to redo, identifying appropriate stakeholders is critical, I think, but not to the exclusion, not to the exclusion of the grassroots. Thank you.
Honourable Kabasha.
No, Chairperson, I agree with what Honourable Matena here is saying. You see, if we take the cue from what is being said, then it means we'll completely exclude the ordinary people. What appeared in Khayelitsha, and I'm certain it will, as you have said, it happened in Northern Cape, it will happen anywhere. People raise issues on which they think Parliament and government should focus spending on. And that's what happened there, and it will happen any time. So we must be careful about how we interpret public hearings and then try to squeeze into a bill something that will limit the participation of people, because people talk money and they talk issues.
We say we are a people's parliament and we must do it. When we had the hearings on the fiscal framework, an elderly lady came from Gauteng by bus. She sat at the back in the old assembly chambers. She came by bus. And she made a submission. She spoke to Parliament. She went back and told the people, I spoke to Parliament, because she phoned me. I'm back at home. I'd ask her, when you get home, just phone me that you are safe. That's the picture we must portray. We're there for the people. Sorry, I'm getting carried away now. Sorry. On the
Aniko. No, I think the discussion is useful. I think that the JP general consensus that we must get up to the issue. But there's no change that is required here, because just to draw attention to members that all head says is that the standing rules must provide for the committee to hold public hearings.
Yeah.
Not how it should be done, whether it should be done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the members, which then are you satisfied? Thank you, page 11. 34 minutes past 12. 11. Pick up little points and we just send them through.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Page 12.
On page 12 is again referring to procedures. If if it was possible that the committees have joint meetings on finance, dealing with the tax laws, the revenue laws, etc. But again, it's an NCOP program that that's very important that we must dovetail. I'm just making this remark. Which 12? Thank you. Anyone else on page 12? Page 13. Very sharp. I put two members by 13. Are you on the lease?
Chairman, I don't want to be too pedantic because when we get the final, when we get a bill, we'll be going line by line and line and line. So, but I'm curious about page 13, the sort of, what is it? I don't know. Is it part of 15? The committees on appropriations may report on the adjustments appropriation bill after Parliament passed the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. Yeah, now I've read it aloud, I think it makes more sense to me.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Page 14. Agreement.
I think the question was asked by the Honourable Scholar Shlope on this clause 13. Yes, on the issue of the exceptional emergency situations. What this bill does, and you have certain jurisdictions that does the opposite. I'm trying not to make it too complicated, but what this bill does is actually ties down Parliament's hands to amend legislation only to the point where we're not interfering with the fiscal framework, once we've passed the fiscal framework. And on top of that, when Parliament makes an amendment to a money bill, it has to comply with the principles of fiscal discipline set out in section 8.5. Now, these provisions do not bind the executive. I mean, there's nothing stopping the minister introducing legislation that binds future generations to debt. It would be for Parliament to undo that, to say, no, we don't want that. But what this bill does, it says to Parliament, once the executive has introduced a money bill, you cannot go and amend that money bill to burden future generations with debt, for instance. I know the Kenyan example is the opposite. The Kenyan example would say the executive is not allowed to do certain things, and sort of a tick box of checklist when that budget bill comes into the Kenyan Parliament. Has the executive complied with what we said it should do in terms of its budget? So it just depends on the kind of financial system the country is following in its amendment procedure and in its introduction of articles. And I think a lot of this comes from the fact that Parliament cannot make a money bill. It's only the Minister of Finance that can introduce a money bill.
therefore the amendments need to be controlled and looked at. So what we have picked up when it comes to other money bills, this is everything that falls outside the budget. For instance, the special appropriation bill for Eskom, although that was introduced with the budget at the time. But should that have been an emergent situation, the question that arose is, can Parliament amend that, seeing that we are tied to the fiscal framework? And we're just trying to open up that avenue, the possibility that Parliament can amend it, notwithstanding that there's a fiscal framework. But whether that's a necessary provision is a different question. Or we just responded to a question that was raised in the meeting. We certainly never required to use this in the 8 years that this bill has now been in operation. So that's from, I mean, the numbering is obviously incorrect. It just happens because we used Windows. I mean, we don't have to have that in there now. I mean, what the PFMA says in Section 16, it says that if there's an emergency situation, money can be used for that. Full stop. You don't have to have an Act of Parliament to use that money. It may only be 2%. It's limited to 2% of the budget. The minister then may use a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund to pay for that emergency. Let's use the example of Knysna again for now. And then in the next budget, that money needs to be appropriated properly. So it's almost either in an adjustments process or in the next budget where we will say, look, that money has been passed on, that money has been allocated already, let's just regularize it in terms of the new budget. So that is what happens in practice, that's what happens in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So the chances that you will get a money bill introduced that the executive is bringing to us and it's not in accordance with the fiscal framework and therefore Parliament will have difficulty changing it, in my view, is very slim. I mean, I'm not aware that it has ever happened. What you will get is rather revenue-raising bills like diamond levy export bill that will come in the middle of the year because there's a new act that deals with diamond exports. That's my experience. But it's very seldom that you will get sort of special appropriation that doesn't form part of the budget. So if there's any doubt, I would say let's rather wait before we deal with this matter. I mean, my suggestion would be that we do not put this in the bill unless there's cogent reasons why it should be there. The only reason it's there is because a question was raised. And we can deal with that in itself. But I really, the question that was raised is there a possibility that Parliament can amend money bills, amend appropriations, not consistent with the fiscal framework, that Parliament is freer to allocate money or to change money that goes outside the fiscal framework. There's a danger in that. There's a danger in that we are extending or affecting credit ratings or the view, the image of the country in terms of stable financial conditions. It was certainly an issue when the Act was drafted in 2009, that we don't want to create the impression that Parliament is free to change the budget and you get that unpredictability coming in. I'm a lawyer, so I always make this joke. This is not outside my salary scale, man, but as far as I know, the markets really hate unpredictability. They stomach anything. You know, they stomach exploitation, and I mean, Mr. Karim has got all the words for them, but they do not like unpredictability. So the whole Act is actually based on this issue of that we have predictability also when we amend the budget. And this is a thin edge of the wedge where we say, look, there is this opportunity where Parliament can go beyond what is predictable. So I'm not 100% comfortable with it as it is. Thanks,
Jim. I note Dr. Mateme and then Uncle Sheila. Mm-hmm.
Maybe let's allow the follow-up before I come in. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Comrade Mateme. Thank you, Chair. For now, I will accept what you have told me, except that I would like to give you a homework to go and think about a possibility, the a rare scenario when that happens. And you know, you spoke very well because you talked about the credit rating and their sensitivity to certainty. So I would also like to give you a second homework. Are they going to downgrade UK that Theresa May is in big trouble and there's all sorts of uncertainty in the UK? And if they don't, will you tell me why they haven't? Thank you.
I think the UK must sort themselves out. We're not going to address that one. Dr. Matema?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think our system really has been serving us very well so far. Because there is no eventuality. There's no eventuality which is not has not been provided for. And on the question of stability, Chair, I feel we are on the right track. We need not manage by crisis. It would be a sad day, really, if our budgeting process does not make provision for the unforeseen circumstances. I think, as of now, the system that is in place has got mechanism for the unforeseen circumstances. Where in my past life we used to talk of violence, we used to talk of many other things. And I would agree with those who said, why fix it when it's not broken? I think we are doing well so far. I think maybe Theresa may learn a thing or two from us. Thank you.
They can learn from us in terms of our oversight model. That I can assure you. Honourable Anukom, I noted, and then Honourable Mutlis.
Maybe the honourable members want Theresa May's surname to change to Theresa Must. I'm covered actually. You know, unless we have some compelling reason that the current system doesn't allow for funds to be made available in the event of a disaster, an earthquake, a flood, a fire, I don't think we have any compelling reason to put in special provision for this. And therefore, I'm largely covered by what we said there.
Thank you, Robo Anukom, Motla Shuping, and a member there.
On that chair, I'm raising a different issue on the same page. What is the wisdom of raising point number 19 on page 14? 19. I see it's been deleted. What is the wisdom?
Part of the page.
Thank you, Chair. That the removal there is just to get rid of those 30-day time frames, because what we've done as a suggestion then, which we've now received different instructions, if I understand the proceedings correctly, what we've done is that the Committee on Appropriation must report. We know that. Mm-hmm. So what we've said, we must report without delay. That decision has now been taken that it must not be just without delay. There must be a time frame in there. But when this was drafted and these proposals were drafted, the main purpose of removing 19 was to get that 30 days out and to put just the obligation to report without delay. Let me see where we've put that in there. I think we've put that at the top where they must meet on appropriations. That's now on the 15 that's been deleted, where we've also had the discussion about only the Committee on Appropriations.
It covers this one. It must report.
It must report. So the only purpose is to remove the 30 days.
Okay.
But we'll have to rethink that and rephrase it to bring it in line with the discussions we've had in this workshop.
Yeah. And mindful of the program of Parliament, because the NA adjourns about 2 weeks before the NCOP because of referrals. I noted, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On the issue of the disaster management, I think Honourable Chairperson, the co-chair, she knows what we have experienced in terms of not budgeting or preparing for disasters. Even though you know every year, by this time of the year, this will happen in this place. We know in Mpumalanga, Bushbuck Reefs and Ngomaza are affected. And when those things happen, we have then to interfere with the budget, which are allocated for other things that we have committed in the legislature and to the public. Now we redirect, because there's a disaster, there's a stoppage of life, actually, if I may say so. So, but we do, what I'm thinking is that such things need us to be prepared, use our experiences and prepare for them. I like what Western Cape has done. They were ready. We have the weather forecast, which is the best we can forecast, you know, days, what is going to happen. And they were ready with everything, and they were able to manage it. If they were not ready, it was going to be a problem. You look at the municipality, the district municipalities, most of them, we have the management centers. How do we expect those management centers to run if we don't have the disaster funds? How do we expect them to run? So I'm saying this with a painful heart. And unfortunately, the Honorable Chair there was the MEC for Finance, and she had to agree to what we were supposed to do, because we were facing a situation where to take budget from other allocations, take it to the municipality, and the municipality, instead of them doing what they are supposed to do in terms of dealing with disaster, they took the money and paid salaries and do other things. And it was just a disaster. We have to then go back again, because the community's life was at a stop. So we have to intervene. So I'm saying it's very important for us to be prepared for such things. Thank you. 100%
correct. If I remember correct, it was in the third parliament, that huge fire in Mpumalanga. It was devastating. It was devastating. Anyone else? At National Treasury, yeah. Yeah. MEC for Finance speaking. Yabo, with all experience, he appeared before our committee. Important point you raised. Honourable members, are you covered with page 14? Thank you. Page 15, Budget Office. There is a model that has been put to the workshop. Honourable Professor.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, there were numerous questions raised about the PBO, so maybe we should respond to it now, earlier on. I think the one issue related to the issue of independence, and the issue of whether it's independence of advice or as an institution. Now again, I refer you to the Act. And the Act is very clear. It's independence of information, advice, etc., etc. It's also independence of the institution. Because if you look in it, and it refers to the next issue that you raised, Honorable McLaughlin, the issue of the director and as an accounting authority. It says there must be a budget transfer. The director reports to Parliament. The director is appointed by the two houses of Parliament, as in my case. So all this refers to accounting authority, refers to independence of the institution, refers to a budget being transferred, you reporting to the to Parliament, to the two houses. So it's clear, it's undertaken in the Act. It talks about the transfer of resources. It talks about who the budget reports, or the budget office reports to in terms of the director. It says who shall appoint the deputy directors in accordance with the committees, etc., etc. So very clear, and I don't see, and that's why I say I don't see where the problem is, Chair. It also talks, and I think Advocate Jenkins, we agreed last time that we would not take out things which are not supposed to be taken out. The Act clearly speaks and says that the director should be appointed at the level of the most senior civil servant in the country. And there's a reason for that. It also sends and talks to the independence of the director of the institution and the accounting authority in that sense. So it's clear, the act to me is not a problem, you know. Which one? Yeah, it's if you go through it, you know, Section 15, very clear. I think where the clarity is needed, Honourable Members, Chair, is when we say, who do we report to? And it talks about Honourable Mutlashoping about Parliament. We say, yes, we report to Parliament, the two houses, but we report to it via the Chairperson of the NCLP and the Speaker of Parliament. That's the executive authority. What we also say is there's an advisory board which comprises of the two house chairs in the NA and the NCLP and four chairs of finance and appropriations. That's what it says in that regard. That serves as your advisory guiding board in this sense. It also doesn't mean that the board is fixed, I think, on the beer, like we discussed in the last meeting that was chaired by Honourable Karim. That members of committees can attend the advisory board meetings if necessary, you know. So I think it's there, Chair, you know, and again, I plead that we implement this. Thank you, Chair.
We are grateful for you, Professor, that you did this work under very difficult circumstances with limited resources. I know that. I noted, Dr. Mateme.
Chairperson, clarity seeking on the reporting mechanism. On the reporting mechanism. Now, established in terms of an Act of Parliament, the submission says we report to the Executive of Parliament. That is the chairperson of NCOP and the Speaker of Parliament. What format does that reporting take? You sit in an office like this one, give them a report, or through them, a written report is submitted to Parliament. Which one is it? Thank you.
You and Dr. Yankee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to add, there was one point, I think, Honourable Mutlashoping, the point about accounting authority and then accounting officer. I think just a clarity. I think the reason why we had accounting authority would not necessarily mean the level of the executive authority. When you have an entity, the accounting officer is called accounting authority, it's not accounting officer. So just in terms of the financial management, it's not that you're saying the director is at the level of the executive, just the entity. Thanks. Dr. Mutini, I think what we do on an annual basis, what we've been doing currently, we prepare a strategic plan, which, you know, we take the money bills provision, section 15.2, which experience should do, and we indicate what we're going to do for the next 5 years, and on a quarterly, on a monthly, on those throughout the year, we do report we prepare reports, we submit to the advisory panel, and then it sends through to the executive authority. So there are reports which also filters in within the Parliament's administration annual
reporting process. So we comply with the necessary administration process there.
It must be aligned to the financial management of Parliament. That is very crucial.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Matebe. The first thing I want to say is that already at this stage there's a contract, a performance contract between myself and the executive authorities that's signed by them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if you look at Section 10, it says the director must annually submit a three-year rolling plan to Parliament, which is a budget, in time for inclusion in Parliament's budget, and a report on the use of the funds. I think there was added in performance, which I think is fine. So it's indicated through that process. We also have a workflow process, which indicates that workflow comes from our committees, the chairs of the committee. So for example, if there's work to be done on education, the appropriations committee will say, we need to have a piece of work done on education. It will come from one of the members. Honorable Lees might propose it. The chair will then send it through to us as the PPO in written form. We will write back to the chair and say, yes, we can do the work, and you know, we will do a presentation. We then come and we do a presentation. We will also report to our executive authority on our work performance, what we've done for the year, and we also meet with the executive authority in terms of reporting on the performance standards and the performance agreement of the director in that regard. We at this stage, Dr. Matebe, as per the Act, have not really implemented the Act, because the Act is clear about how you report. We have not gone to Parliament and submitted our annual reports, although we prepared them and they're there. They've been signed by our advisory board and our speaker and our chair, but we haven't tabled it to Parliament. We haven't gone to Parliament and said we want a three-year rolling plan, budget, etc. So we do this, we say, via the advisory board and the executive authority in this case.
Chairperson, thank you. Two things. It hasn't been happening until now. May we be told why this has been so? But secondly, my other question is, any funds given to whatever structure through Parliament, there must be a structure that place oversight, that checks on the use of those funds. Is this committee the structure that oversees the PBO, or is there some other structure? My second question, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Matebe, and I'm happy you raised the issue, because it's exactly the same issue with Parliament itself. We never had a structure to oversee Parliament, and now they have a joint committee to oversee Parliament. I don't know if you know that, but it is operational now. The PBO before has indicated that we recognize this problem. We said what we need is an advisory board to oversee, in that sense, the structure, which if we get transfers of money, which we haven't, or if we can, you know, advertise for positions, etc. That structure is in place there, the advisory board. And through that structure, the executive authority, and that is the accounting line. So I think we've surpassed Parliament even. In this sense, and I think there's also a model for the joint committee to look at in overseeing the work of Parliament itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Just another point of emphasis. I think what has happened, Chair, is that we've never had a budget as PBO since. I mean, we've never had a budget in a way that we're currently working within parliamentary administration. So all the contributing mechanism, oversight mechanism, I mean, if we have to procure or appoint somebody, it goes to the HR of Parliament. So necessarily there are some mechanisms, because the accounting Parliament accounting officer would have to satisfy themselves whether what PBO is doing is in line with SMPPL, is in line with those. So at this stage, we don't have a budget, so we work within Parliament. So it's, you know, it's a good concern about oversight, but at this stage, we're reliant on the oversight of Parliament. I just want to emphasize that we've never had budget, so there's no problem for us. Thank you.
If you look at the appropriation bill, and you come to vote to Parliament, it's one page. Also in the estimates of expenditure, the thick book, it's one page. Yes.
I take it then, having listened to Prof and to Dumsan, then the proposed amendment to clauses in 3 and 5 should not be made in the bill.
Just help us. Clauses 3 and 5. Oh, on page 15. Let's go on record, Prof. It's been recorded.
Thank you, Chair. I said also the point that the directors appointed at the senior level should remain in this instance as well.
Page 16.
If I may again provide some guidance, I think the reporting line to the executive authority and the advisory board, I think in your advocate Jenkins, that's critical as well.
It is critical.
So,
as I said, must be aligned with the Financial Management of Parliament Act.
Yeah,
there must be alignment.
Correct. Thank you, Chair.
It's crucial. Honourable members, page 16. I don't want to rush you, but we're on 1 o'clock.
Chair, if I may, okay,
yes, Prof.
There's item 10 on Advocate Jenkins.
Item 10.
And in line, the director will be responsible and accountable for financial and human resource management. That is in the act already, but I think you're spelling it out a bit more clearly. Where the act says the director will appoint the deputies, etc.
You find agreement. That is page 16 on the members. Then we come to the schedule. Everything is in red. By the legislators. Dr. Matema, just go on record, please. Please speak into the mic.
I was saying, can we just be informed as to why this deletion of the schedule? Thank you.
Dr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Chairperson. The reason is that Section 120, subsection 3 of the Constitution requires provincial legislatures to have a provincial act that sets out the procedure to amend provincial money bills. And further, at section 116 of the Constitution, provincial legislatures are in control of their own internal processes, proceedings, and processes and proceedings. Well, it's internal arrangements, process, and proceedings. And that really summarizes the sort of constitutional authority that the province has concerning its process in terms of its provincial money bill. And the discussion we had, and this is really about 5 or 6 years ago with KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature, is that there is a constitutional concern about the schedule because it's an enforceable, it's norms and standards, but it's enforceable norms and standards, it's per entry. So my suggestion therefore is either we make this just pure norms and standards. In other words, it sets a guideline. Alternatively, and that's one way of getting people to talk about it, we take a radical option and we delete everything. So
that I followed that one. It's not a proposal. I'm not saying we must do it. We deleted everything just to get people to look at it and say, why is this going? Or should we not talk about this? We should talk about it. The whole idea of the schedule at the time when the Act was passed was to have consistency within the nine provinces, so that we know, again, there's predictability within how we're going to deal with the budget. So that is the discussion we must have. To ensure consistency, how do we do that? And one option is to put it as a guideline. And there are examples in other legislation where you put guidelines in there, which is not necessarily statutory per entry in that sense of the word. But certainly people can look at it and say, okay, at least we know what to do when we pass our own provincial legislation on this matter. But it's from where I'm sitting and from a legal opinion point of view, Parliament does not have the power to tell a provincial legislature how it must deal with its own constitutional power that was given to it. I mean, that is what used to be called ultra vires, what's now called the principle of legality. Parliament just cannot do that.
Noted, Honourable Mutla Shuping.
No, not sure. I was looking at the issue of time and said we don't have much time to have interrogated what has been deleted here. You see, South Africa is a unitary state. We shouldn't find us creating a federal state here.
Yeah.
Because we will end in trouble. I just heard what Professor Jenkins is saying about the provinces and the powers. So we need to go and examine and look into deeper into this issue. Thank you, Chair.
There's a recommendation that we look deeper into this so that we keep it as is. Is that what you're saying? Anyone else referring to page 17 and take it 18 as well? Oh, sorry, Honourable Shiva.
Thank you, Chair. In the 2 weeks before Honourable Minister Pravin Gordhan left office, he came to us in the study group, and I raised this thing of provinces and municipalities and saying, you know, national departments have got this tendency of saying, no, we can't help the provinces because they have got separate arrangements. He said, in answer, he said, they should have used a certain section. He said section 4.4, something like that. If we can check in the Constitution, if there is such a section that can actually assist us as a parliament, or maybe it only applies to the executive, I don't know. But my thinking is that if, especially the Appropriation Committee, if we debate the appropriation and pass the budget and have to follow the money on a quarterly basis, I don't think we've got exemption for certain others not to follow them. We need to know and to be answerable to the taxpayers of South Africa where their money has gone.
I mean, clearly we have to comply with the Constitution, and clearly priorities in provinces will vary, there's no question about that. But I would support the proposal here that we give it some more thought and look at 146 of the Constitution, dealing with conflicting laws, where national legislation applies uniformly with regard to the country as a whole, prevails over provincial legislation if any of the following conditions are met, and it lists the conditions. Because you don't want provinces to be able to willy-nilly, you know, amend budgets in their own way, in nine different ways around the country.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be desirable.
Thank you for that clarity, Honourable Anakon. Dr. Mateme?
Chairperson, I'm covered by the colleagues here who remind us that we are a unitary state. I'm covered by that. But I would go further and say, maybe in the interest of time, Chair, from your good, you and your co-chair, can we have time, not necessarily today, to apply our mind to the deleted section, reading it together with what Honorable Hanekom is referring us to? Can we take that as our homework?
100%, Dr. Mateme.
Section 44.4 of the Constitution and Section 146 of the Constitution. Let's go and read it. Honourable Leaf.
Mr. Chairman, completely different subject, and before we run away, the Finance Committee needs to consider the Twin Peaks Bill, some process there. I know we don't have our chair, but we actually, this is now urgent. This bill is coming before Parliament on Friday, and so I need us to talk about it. Doesn't have to involve everyone else.
Friday?
It's Thursday, sorry, Thursday, Thursday.
Yeah, well, I don't know what. I'm just facilitating this workshop. I can't express.
Mr. Chairman, you're chair of that other finance committee, so this is going to affect you too.
Yeah, he's back on Thursday. He's back on Thursday morning. He's flying direct from Munich to Cape Town. It's a direct flight. That's all I can give you now. I don't know anything more.
Jimmy, can I then just ask...
Advocate Jenkins maybe can...
Yeah, I need to put the question.
Sorry.
He can quickly answer the question. It's
really
quite a simple matter, really, but it needs an answer, a legal answer. Mr. Chairman, just the committee has agreed on amendments to the bill. The whole bill is going to be put to the National Assembly on Thursday afternoon, but we don't have a copy of the whole bill. And so all we've got at this stage is a miniature, just the parts of the bill that we've amended. But we haven't got the amended bill that will be debated on Thursday. And so, I mean, when are we going to get them?
When we dealt with the Twin Peaks and the SNP, before we went to the House, we had the whole bill. And that's how we dealt with it and referred it to the NA. So... Edgar Jenkins, I can't answer yet. Thank you, Honorable Hanekom. We worked very hard. And we were very few members. We are small in numbers.
Chair, there's, on that question, there was one or two corrections that have been made to the bill. There's an amendment that were adopted and changed slightly by the Standing Committee on Finance. Those have been incorporated. We've checked those. Then there were some typographical errors that crept in because of the time constraints, if I can use an excuse, but there shouldn't be an excuse, but we used a bit short stop, that we are correcting. So at the moment, we are at the last stages of dealing. We're just changing the memorandum, and the plan is to have that bill ready by tomorrow. But in substance, it's the bill that was passed by the National Assembly, and the amendments, as we change them, coming from the NCOP, that will be the substance of the bill. But you will have a copy of the bill, if all goes according to plan, by tomorrow. And, I can only apologize that it's, again, so short space of time, but it's very difficult. I mean, we've looked at it, we've tried our best. It needs to go back and forth, and we need to look at it. We're dealing with CREDA, our printers. It's not none of their fault, but they will send us a proof. We'll look at that proof, the first proof, contain all the amendments that the Standing Committee agreed upon. The second proof, we deal with typographical errors to correct those. The third proof, we pick up new things. I mean, funny things crept in. It's amazing what creeps in about headings that move wrong, but everything needs to be done by hand. You need to draw a line to say, this must go there, and email it back to CREDA. And that's the system we're working on. We don't have that legislative system which we want, which is basically an electronic tracking system which will facilitate things faster. So we're up against that, but by tomorrow the bill should be there, as it will be served in front of the House. There's no way that the House can vote if the bill is not before the members. That's a fact.
Ellen, do you have a meeting tomorrow, the Standing Committee on Finance?
Yes.
This is a very serious matter that you will have to deal with at the agenda.
Chair, sorry, we're just... taking an advantage that you are there, you are part of your meeting. I wanted to find out from Mr. Liz what does he suggest, because I think if it's possible, but I wanted to hear from him first before I suggest something, because what he's saying is true, And I think we don't want to rush into things and do mistakes, and we learn after that we have rushed this thing and it has not gone through the necessary processes, or not everybody has been able to go through it. Maybe let's find out from him, what does he suggest we do?
I believe.
Thanks, Dikadeli. I'm not 100% sure, because Frank's quite right. I mean, the time frame is tight. Errors have been found. And what we need to prevent is, through no one's fault, what we voted on in the National Assembly last time round left out some of the amendments that we had made to the bill. And then you had to put them in, if I remember correctly, for us, and presumably they're now in. So there's no blame here. You see, I'm just concerned that we haven't had an opportunity to really look at this thing. And yeah.
I understand 100% what you're saying.
I don't know what your answer is here, other than saying, well, let's deal with it in the next quarter, which will have its own implications. I mean, yeah.
Alan, you will have to liaise with Honorable Karim to get a way forward here. But it's crucial that document is made available to members through the night, if it's possible. Yes.
I think let's try and distribute it as soon as we've checked it and verified. We don't want to distribute something that's full of errors. So, just very shortly, Chair, on the previous question on the schedule and how it works and your constitutional authority vis-a-vis South Africa being a unitary state, I think those are facts. Those are legal facts we don't have to discuss further. But when members consider this matter, there's a few things that could help. One being, the budgetary process is a national process. So provinces can't deviate from what's decided at national level, point one. And point two, maybe just look at, I think, what is it, section 41 of the Constitution, cooperative government, which requires, and maybe this is what former Minister Gordon referred to, section 41, sub 1, paragraph C, which requires that there's coherent government for the Republic as a whole. And that's a constitutional obligation where provinces can't deviate from what is decided nationally, especially on something like finances. In fact, there's intervention powers for national government should that happen. So that's just something to consider. But what I'm trying to say with that is the schedule is actually superfluous, because there is other constitutional obligations that ensure that there's unity when it comes to financial matters in South Africa. So we don't have to go overkill and actually expose ourselves by trying to push the constitutional boundaries with legislation when we already have the safeguards to ensure that they will be there. That being said, we need to consider it properly. I'm just trying to add another aspect to the thinking process. Thanks, Chair.
I must tell you, we will have to work 25 hours a day and 8 days in a week to get through all our work. Last, and then Honorable Poza.
Chair, I just want to repeat by proposing that while we say the Secretariat must consult with the Chair, there should be at least a suggestion from us that is it possible that we can work on it tomorrow? And advocate, I think, will also advise. If it's possible to finalize it.
On the Twin Peaks book?
Yes.
I don't know if there's a committee meeting scheduled for tomorrow, ma'am, but we are working around the clock on that since the...
We have
the
a meeting tomorrow,
yeah, standing
but there's
committee
another agenda,
meeting.
Hence we say Secretariat must consult with the Chairperson if possibly we can...
The time frame with South Africa and Germany is the same, so there's no difference. You can phone in. Yeah. Honorable Poza.
Some case study. I just want to check on what would be feasible. The involvement of Parliament in the budget process at its formative stage. When I say it comes from a case study, to avoid a situation where towards the end of the process, then you get, for instance, a proposal to amend the budget. And I'm talking a proposal of, say, I'm giving a practical example, say 600 amendments towards the end of the budget. Now, I'm looking at a possibility of getting involved as early as at the formation stage, so that those inputs can be made there. If indeed we've got good intentions to strengthen the budget.
I think, given that that's policy arena by formulating the budget, it's difficult to put in legislation that appears inconsistent with the Constitution, which requires that the executive takes policy decisions. But I think your suggestion could be addressed through negotiation and through putting in systems. I don't want to call it an informal system, but certainly in a consultative process to make things easier. We have the example of the Revenue Laws Amendment Bills, Rates and Taxes Bills, Monetary Amounts Bills, which are introduced as a draft. It comes as a proposal to the Houses, then it's a draft. We have public hearings on the proposals and the draft before the bill actually comes to Parliament. And that sets to me, for me, an example of how Parliament can deal with the whole budget process. To deal with the draft, to deal with the proposals, to deal with the draft, and to give inputs, and to have that process almost smoothing out the difficulties that we experience at this point. I mean, what you've experienced in your committee, ma'am, was an alternative budget by the opposition that they brought in. So if we're talking about, let's consult with the National Treasury on certain issues of the budget so that we have a smoother process later on. One must think then of a political mechanism to include opposition parties and so the like, so that at least at that stage we also know what the alternative budget might entail. Because I think the crux of the challenge that you faced was shortage of time and the scope of the amendments that were proposed, which was basically an alternative budget of 10.5 billion rand. This is a big thing to deal with. So one must keep that in mind, how you can get almost a multi-party process going and get inputs and then prepare a program where everything can be ventilated and the public can have a say in that.
Honourable members, now we are being depleted now because members are debating and there's committees, meetings between 1 and 2. I want to thank honourable members. You were very, very vigilant this morning. It's the first time since 2009 that this act has been interrogated in this fashion. It's the first time. You did excellent this morning. The way forward, the technical committee, that's the staff of government, have to keep the act within that outstanding. The other point is a subcommittee, this bill was referred to that. The referral was the standing committee. So we were, the workshop will have to establish a subcommittee to assist and work with the technical team. Our next meeting is, if I'm correct, Alan, it's Wednesday the 28th of June. Am I correct? Yes. And then Parliament adjourned for the winter constituency period, and we come back on the 1st of August. The SOP is in Parliament for 2 weeks, out on oversight and taking Parliament to the people. That's the last 2 weeks of August, and then back in September again. So I put it to the workshop, on the co-chair, you must now assist. If I can, from the NCOP side, finance, propose Honourable Motara. The reason is, she's the committee whip for finance and appropriations, because we are the same member.
Members,
I'm going to take a picture. Here's my phone. the Standing Committee on Finance.
Yes, the two presentations.
I can't speak for them.
But this one as well.
I'm going to Clady. Are you available for the subcommittee? Although Anakom, we need assistance. You know, honestly, this is hard work. Things in cloud. There's nothing else. Honorable Anakom, fantastic. That's three. Can we get someone from the? It's a multi-party. In here? Mr. Lees, are you happy with Mr. Lees? That is the four members.
I can tell you now, it's not here from Aten. It will be clear, you know.
All the members, thank you very much.
Then, you know.
Have a good afternoon.